It's time for TWIP. My old friend Patrick Norton is here. It's a Screensavers reunion. Christina Warren from Mashable will join us. We'll talk about a big week ahead. Lots of new phones coming out. What we think the iPhone announcement will bring, and a whole lot more. Stay tuned. TWIT is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWIT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWIT, This Week in Tech, episode 473, recorded August 31st, 2014, Weaponized Dirigibles. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Warby Parker Eyewear. Get boutique-quality, classically crafted eyewear, including sunglasses at revolutionary prices. For a free home try-on of five stylish frames of your choice, plus free three-day shipping, go to warbyparker.com/twit. And by Carbonite. Whether you have one computer at home or several at your small business, Carbonite backs up your files to the cloud automatically and continually. Plus, access your files anytime, anywhere with a free app. Start your free trial at Carbonite.com. No credit card required. Use the offer code TWIT, and you'll get two bonus months with purchase. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free two-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code TWIT. And by audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get two free books. Go to audible.com/twit2. And don't forget to follow Audible on Twitter, user ID audible_com. It's time for TWIT This Week in Tech, the show where we cover all the tech news in obsessive, compulsive, over-eager detail. That's why I brought Christina Warren in. It's good to, good to have you, Christina, editor from Mashable, film girl on the Twitter. We are big fans, as you know, and every time I have you on, people say, you should have her on more. So you're on more.
Woohoo!
Woohoo! And also my old friend Patrick Norton, my former co-host at Screensavers, currently host of Techzilla with Snubs, and it's great to see you once again, also host of This Week in Computer Hardware.
Yes.
I immediately sent a note to Anand Shimpi saying, because did you see Anand's retiring? 32 years old and he's retiring.
No, he's going to Apple.
What?
Yeah, this they just posted this in IRC. I figured he was going to go to Intel. No, he is going to work at Apple.
So, okay, Anand Shimpi, we knew him from when he was a high school kid and we started writing Anand Tech. Pat, thank you for that. Was that intentional? Goal! Patrick Norton and I interviewed him many times on the Screensavers. He's one of the smartest, if not the smartest, analysts out there. I mean, his long pieces on how Intel's works and stuff like that, just phenomenal.
He kind of also, like when solid-state drives became a thing, Anand does the homework. Anand does the homework at an obsessive, compulsive level, and he benchmarks, and he... You laugh, right? But when you realize how much time it takes and how many product managers and engineers you have to develop relationships with to get answers like that, and it's crazy, right? Because, you know...
No, he's insane. He's so good.
He says he was traveling 130,000 miles a year.
I believe it.
That's how much work. Now, the interesting thing there is Anand.
After 17.5 years of digging, testing, analyzing, and writing about the most interesting stuff in tech, it's time for a change.
He was 14 years old when he started Anand's Tech in 1997. 32 now. You know, what's interesting is his blog post doesn't mention Apple.
No, but it made it clear that he would be around to talk to people if they needed anything, but that he wouldn't have any editorial anything going on. And the way it was written, it made me think, okay, so he got some sort of big offer from a big company, and I just assumed Intel, but Apple actually makes a lot of sense.
Recode just posted
that it was Apple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Veteran tech journalist Anand Shimpi headed to Apple.
Interesting. What do you think Anand would do at Apple?
Chip research? I don't know. I mean, probably some product design. I mean, he's, as Patrick was saying, I mean, he does his homework, and he doesn't just do his homework. He does his homework hardcore. Like, the testing suites he's created are some of the best out there. I mean, he's one of the smartest people I've ever met, and certainly one of the favorite people I've ever had to read. So
I agree, and it's a loss, I feel, to people. The consumer.
It is, unless he could actually maybe have a role in building and designing the next generation of mobile phone chips or GPUs or CPUs. I mean, we certainly lose a huge amount, I think, from having him not writing these things. But if he could take his knowledge and his fantastic analysis to the product design side, I mean, that could be kind of cool, right?
John Patchkasky, as usual, with the scoop, and he says in his article, which was posted half an hour ago, an Apple rep has confirmed that the company is hiring Shinpei. Wow. So, boy, that's an interesting, unexpected twist to that story.
Congrats, Anand.
Yeah, congrats, Anand. I guess congrats. I presume that in order for him to abandon Anand Tech, they must have offered him a lot of money. Don't you think?
Oh, I think they backed Brink's truck up, I think is what that's called, yeah.
Full of stock.
Well, or more likely, they offered him a challenge that he couldn't resist. I don't really think Anand's motivated by money. I'm sure he likes money, but I don't think he's particularly motivated by it.
Well, now I am embarrassed because I wrote him a note saying, hey, anytime you want to come on Twit, please do. But I guess he's
busy. You never know. I don't know. I mean, he was saying in his note that I can't believe he's only like a year older than I am. And you know, he's been doing this for almost 18 years. That's a really long time to do something. So I think Patrick's point about wanting to another challenge, that makes a lot of sense.
He might be a little tired. He wants to relax a little bit. Well, that brings us to Apple, because apparently they're building a giant structure next to the Flint Center, and something is going on. Apple invitations have gone out. Did you get one?
No.
Did you get one?
I did.
Shut up.
Do you remember the thing we did where I said OS X wasn't that much easier than Windows?
Come on. Apple's not that petty.
Gizmodo got let back in.
Gizmodo is going to the Apple event. This is the invitation. It says 9/9/2014. This was the date that many had speculated. Renee Ritchie said it would be this date, I might point out, in the spring, but only based on previous Apple announcements. So it usually is right around the first full week of September. It's always on a Tuesday. Wish we could say more is the only text besides the date on the page. I don't think you can get more oblique than that. Usually people read into these things, and you can't read into that.
I'm pretty sure if you wanted to go to Vegas and make a bet on this, that you could probably get really, nobody's going to take that. There's not going to be an iPhone.
There's definitely an iPhone.
So there's an iPhone 6.
Patchkasky says there's a watch.
Everybody says they're a watch.
Well, but we didn't think they'd, Gruber said that they would announce it in September, and then he took it back. He said, I was just joking. But it turns out it wasn't much of a joke because he was right. And Patchkasky has said, now, he's not saying watch. Everybody's saying now wearable. We don't want to get too boxed in. Could be a hat.
The eye hat. Where maybe it's the eyeglasses.
Jason Snell says a smart hat is a better idea than a smart watch, and I kind of agree. More people wear hats than watches nowadays, right?
I don't know. Maybe if it has one of those, one of those Homer Simpson hats that connects to the beer can, so you can drink, your beer or your Apple Martini through it. That would be kind of cool.
What exactly, though? I mean, I don't even want to engage the concept of a smart hat because suddenly, I can totally see a Boonie hat with solar cells on top.
It could measure in fact, it could have a little thing for your ears so it could measure more stuff. Your blood sugar and your VO max and all of that.
But they're already putting the little things they clip on your finger in the hospital. I've already seen those built into
a watch.
Into actually watch band style.
And you put it on your finger?
No, it's actually embedded in the bottom of the watch face. So the underside of it actually does VO2 pulse.
I am told that it's difficult to do, you can do pulse, but not when you're exercising. And it's difficult to do blood pressure on the wrist. I've been told. I don't know.
Blood pressure is pretty difficult, period.
I'm not a doctor. Yeah, you don't really want your watch getting really tight for a little while. And then going, letting the... No, you don't want that. That would be weird. It will be at the Flint Center. This is... Apple typically doesn't do announcements in Cupertino. In the past, they've done them at the Moscone Center.
They got too big to do them. Because they didn't for years.
Moscone West is big.
Yeah.
Moscone West is big, but they haven't been...
four times the size.
Is it?
Yeah, this is, I think it was David Smith posted the seating capacity in Cupertino, where they sometimes do it on campus. It's like
that's
a couple
tiny.
Hundred people.
Yeah,
it's like 790 or 800 people at Moscone West, and then it's 2,500 at the Flint Center.
That's not that many.
No, but I mean, if you're talking about four times of an increase, going from seven something to like, 2,500 people, I mean, that's still pretty significant.
Yeah, but this also sounds like maybe they're going back to the old days because one of the things that used to be amazing about going to an Apple press conference back before I got, persona non grata was, they would have sort of like a layer of people who were probably going to be presenting or
right.
that were heavily involved, a couple layers of people. Then they would bury the media a few rows back, and then they would put like all of everyone who worked on the project came next, and everyone who, they would pack the building. It was so awesome. Because, the media would be surrounded by people who'd be like, as soon as Steve walks on stage and something gets announced, and the only time I ever heard that backfire was when they announced the Intel processors.
That Macworld.
Literally, yeah. The entire audience went, except for like me and three other people who had actually done real benchmarks and knew that the app.
I was excited, but
the processors are going to be faster and less expensive. What a great idea, Steve! You're going to actually, use code that can be portable across different platforms. What a great idea, Steve!
But that was at WWDC, right? And that was when you have like people who've spent a decade like buying, drinking the Kool-Aid that no, PowerPC really is better, even though we can't get a faster processor to go in a laptop because it runs so hot.
Well, do remember, though, developers disdained a little bit the x86 architecture. There was, if you had spent all your
superior time... Superior coders work on a RISC platform, right, because that's why it's been done in the Unix world for decades. Exactly. I mean, if you're going to go the Cray route, I mean, that's a possible upgrade. But you'd also be like, because, you'd read you'd recreate benchmarks that Apple was building ad campaigns around, and it was like, Apple's taking code that the finest engineers on the planet have combed and picked the nits out of and made amazing, and then they'd use jank out of the box code to run on an x86 platform. They'd be like, megahertz for megahertz, we kick their ass. And it's like, okay,
that's a good point.
You took the latest Audi diesel powered race car and put it up against like a 53 Beetle, and yes, you're faster. But that was also the Apple way. We're not lying. We're just nuancing the truth.
There's
in a very,
very
special way.
Big, and I mean big, building being built next to the Flint Center that is obviously part of this Apple event. Now, Apple, the Flint Center does have some history with Apple. That's where the Macintosh was announced. Remember Steve Jobs in a bow tie pulling the Mac out of the case? It says, "Hello, I'm a Mac." Remember that? That was at the Flint Center. In fact, they just had an anniversary celebration a few months ago at the Flint Center for the original Macintosh, which came out in 1984. 40 years. What? How many years? 40 30. Years? Wait, 30.
Apple, yeah, 30.
30.
Apple's
okay.
40 years old, yeah. And
thank God.
Almost,
okay.
Yeah, no, totally.
So they can have more people, huh?
Definitely.
Would be room to invite Gizmodo and me and Patrick?
There should be.
Okay,
I got an invite. Is all I'm saying. And
are
I
you going?
Don't get invited. They're sending a photographer at my place. Yeah.
This is crazy. So this is actually they're calling it a side stage.
I think it's the demo room, but I don't know. It's an interesting. So Apple often at these events. But the one reason I would want to go is Apple often, as they did with the iPhone and the iPad, gives you a chance to touch it long before it's actually available. Right. They didn't do that with the iPhone. I take that back. But the iPad.
Read the article about the launch of the iPhone?
Yeah, wasn't that fascinating?
Yeah. They weren't actually sure the iPhone would get through the demos.
This is from a book, a fabulous book called Dogfight.
Dogfight.
Yeah. Which I loved. And one of the scenes is one of the Apple engineers, and they would take a drink each time a step of the demo got cleared without a break, without something crashing. And he says, by the end of it, we were very happy and very drunk. Because they're sitting in the audience going, "Oof!" I was sitting behind him. I didn't notice all of that going on. I do think this bodes well. It means that there will be a demo room, and a fairly large demo room at that, for iPhones and maybe even for wearables.
Yeah, to me, the fact that they're doing it this much bigger signifies that they're announcing something else. Like this.
Eddie Q, we might point
it feels
out,
like it.
At the All Things D event, or I guess it was the, was it Recode by then, at the event earlier this year?
The Code Conference.
Earlier this year. Said Apple has the best product pipeline I've seen in 25 years. It's a long time. this might be part of that product pipeline.
So they're going to do something that's better than the resurrection of the Macintosh brand, the resurrection of the Macintosh platform, the introduction of the next generation.
It's saying a lot.
Of the iPad, the iPhone, the iPod.
It's saying a lot.
Okay.
We'll see, Eddie. It could just be marketing.
By the way, speaking of great articles, Mark Gurman, once again, 9 to 5 Mac, a long, very well-researched piece on Apple's marketing technology. Their ability to sway the press. It's fascinating reading, which I highly recommend. And talks about the fact that, for instance, 2 weeks before these events, they're rehearsing, which means right now Tim Cook right. is spending his Sunday afternoon inside a sealed room at Flint Center, that they are provided with white booklets for the keynote, which are shredded before the actual event. It's a great story about the title is Seeing Through the Illusion, Understanding Apple's Mastery of the Media. Yeah. And I think here we are, three people who've covered Apple for quite some time. I think we would have to agree that Apple, there's no one better at doing this than Apple, whether it's the keynotes, the product announcements, or just simply getting the press to go along. Yes?
No, they're the best, far and away. They're the best. They're one of the only ones who, I mean, they're going to be announcing this. Technically, some things with IFA will still be going on. Right. And I guarantee you that next week in Berlin, everybody's going to be talking about Apple and not about, you know, all the stuff that's happening there. They're one of the right. only companies I can think of in any industry who fully dominates the conversation, no matter what's happening around them. They are masters at that.
Yeah, how many times have we been at CES in January when Apple is the topic, not there, but the topic of discussion, right?
Well, they've also, they dominate the industry in some very interesting ways. I mean, it's also, I mean, think about it this way, like, you know, John Gruber, Daring Fireball, great analyst, great to read, great. But then he became, like, he got on the list with, you know, who else? Walt Mossberger, right. David Pogue.
Yeah, Mossberg, Steve Jobs would actually take him for walks.
Right, and John Gruber. So those are the three people who get early access who basically get to see NDA looks at Apple products. Is there anybody else on that list?
Ed Baig from USA Today.
Okay.
Pogue now is at Yahoo.
We can presume Mossberg he'll still get
is now
access.
No longer at the Journal. I wonder. I think those guys won't get that kind of access anymore.
No, they will.
From
what Mark was writing and from my own people I've talked to, I guess I should say, sources familiar with the matter. they tend to follow the journalist more so than the publication. Right.
Well, that would lead me to believe that it's not the clout of the journalist, but the fact that the journalist is friendly.
I think it's a big part of that. So, you know, Engadget, when they got in, what happened when all of them went to The Verge then got access, and it took Engadget a couple more cycles to get right. in their good graces. It took us, we got invited to some things, and then someone who no longer works for us was rude or something. I'm still mad about that.
It's so easy, trust me.
So we were put on the list of not being allowed into anything, and it took us a few years to get back on the list, and we're not on, I'm not sure if we're going to be getting any early access things and whatnot. We typically are the first round with laptops, but not with phones.
John, here's the image, of the big four, the four horsemen of the apocalypse. You got Pogue.
Yeah.
You got Baig. You got Stephen Levy. We left him out. I don't know. Stephen, probably not as important as he used to be, although he's at Wired now. And, of course, Walt Mossberg.
And he's going to Medium.
That's right. He's going to be an editor at Medium. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So he hasn't been. Yeah. And you know, I think that was just, those were the four original iPhone reviewers. But Mark put together this awesome spreadsheet that shows like who gets them every single time.
Right.
And it's, it was one of those funny things where I was like, yep, you know, from people that I know at other publications and, you know, because we all have these conversations, but none of us actually would be willing to write what Mark wrote, which is the really funny thing. That's why it's really impressive that he wrote this, because many of us know a lot of these details, but don't have the balls.
Well, we don't want to talk about it because it looks like we're whining.
Well, or we just, you know, if you're like in somebody's good graces, you're like, God, I don't want to piss you off, you know?
Oh, no, I don't care about that. But of course, that's why I'm not in anybody's good graces. Look at, by the way, at this top of the chart, Anand Tech, no devices until the last two.
Mm-hmm.
XXXXXXX. On the other hand, David Pogue and Ed Baig, every device. Mm-hmm. Every device.
And Mossberg.
Let's go down to Mossberg. Yeah, every device. So, yeah, but that is interesting. I used to, Jason Snell, a lot of X's. He's the editor-in-chief of Macworld. Mm-hmm. Three green checks. I used to get review devices in the era of the iPod. I remember Jim Latterback coming back from the iPod event in 2001. We were at Tech TV and saying, oh, Apple wanted you to have this. And throwing an throwing an iPod at me. But that's about the last time that. Wait a minute. No, I remember one Christmas, I got a box with a red ribbon on it from Apple and had like a couple of iPods in it.
That makes one of us.
Yeah. Well, no, I sent it back. But the funny thing is that once you're off that list, it's hard to get back on it.
I wouldn't want to
be on it, frankly. I don't. But I think this is a way of is it not a way of manipulating media, frankly?
Oh, absolutely. It's total, no,
oh, totally.
The thing that makes Apple so good at this is most organizations are nervous around the media or have a large enough pool that they're not particularly concerned, or they think their product has a large enough footprint, or they just want to be nice to everybody because you never know who the next, you know, Walt Mossberg is going to come from or where that person is going to come from. Apple is an extension. Apple's PR department is this huge, or traditionally, or has been for the last 15 years, this extension of Steve Jobs' utter belief in total control and paranoia. And there's this insane security mechanism that was built, or maybe I, you know, look what the man did with the stock. I can't really question anything that's going on in Apple with any legitimacy. But this incredible level of secrecy and this internal security system that probably isn't rivaled anywhere except for sort of the KBG in the Cold War years.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
that's why we often talk about Kremlinology when we talk about reading the tea leaves of the Apple announcements. It's very much like Kremlinology and analyzing who's standing on the podium during the May Day parade next to Gorbachev. Who's that?
Yeah, and it's you look at it and it's and they've built they absolutely. It's like if you say something, it's not nice. Like if Walt Mossberg said, you know, this is a piece of crap, he'd be X'd.
Would he?
Absolutely.
No, I take it. Well, I take umbrage.
I think
Walt has said.
Okay.
No, Walt has said some negative things about Apple.
He has, but if he were to go, I guess, totally rogue, if he were to do like more of a 180 from his typical approach, like you can be negative, you can give something a bad review, but if you were to start leaking things, if you were to start doing things like what Mark Gurman does, if you were to start,
on this list, by the way, I don't think he's,
and he never will be. No,
yeah,
no,
but,
Mark never will be, and that's not a slight on Mark. I think Mark is fantastic, and I think
I think the people on that list.
Does.
No one should be able to get away with leaking information. You violate an NDA, you should get smacked down, period. But the people on that list with all the greens, like, really? Have they really had a negative review of an Apple product?
Some of them have, but it's not going to be as...
This was not as much of a jump over the last iPad as I expected
it would
be. It's not really a negative review.
Well, and I think that does a disservice to the public, and the public should know these facts because you want to know who to listen to.
Well, you do, but I mean, I think that it comes down to the journalist about whether or not they feel like they can say anything they want. Like, I know that when I review an Apple product, I've given some things bad reviews. I genuinely like their products and I generally like them. But when there are things I don't like, I'll go on a tangent about it. I mean, I wrote something. I remember when they released the iPad 4 a few months after the iPad 3, and I was mad.
Me too.
And the fanboys came after me, which was really funny because I'm like, okay, guys, like they started calling me like an anti-Apple person and I started laughing. I was like, yesterday I was in their pocket, today, like I'm not. But
the other thing, the other negative that Apple creates by having these obvious favorites, not merely does that bad for the favorites, but it's bad in a way for everybody. You really don't want to be on this list because it means you are somehow suspicious. Don't you think?
Yeah,
and I think it's bad for everybody.
You want to be on the list. No, you want to be on the list.
I don't want to be on the list.
Well, you might not want to, but other places do because you want to have access as early as possible.
I can afford to buy stuff. I'm lucky enough that I just buy this stuff and review.
No, I mean, we do it too, but the difference is if you can have it 2 or 3 days early from a traffic perspective, that makes a big difference.
And I was going to say, I got no lead time. We're live.
I got $100 that says if you get an invitation.
Oh, I'd go. Oh, I'd go.
Of course.
No, of course. You know, I have to say, I feel very fortunate that I got to see Steve Jobs in his prime announce the iPhone and the iPad, two of the most amazing events I've ever been at, watching a true master of showman, a brilliant guy, do these demos. And I'm glad I was there. And I think it's fun to go to these events.
Right.
But really, we're going to cover the event. Now, so Andy Iannocco, just so our viewers know, Andy Iannacco and Renee Nerici both did get invitations. They will both be there. We're going to cover it as we always do, whether there's a live stream or not. I've been told there will be a live stream this time. But even if not, we'd go live at 10 a.m. on Tuesday the 9th. Mike Elgin and I will be anchoring it from here. So if I get invited, it kind of you can't cover it if you're invited.
Right.
You have to live blog it. Or,
you have to live
or
blog it.
If you bring a laptop, just a little tip, you can turn it around and FaceTime it.
Don't do that.
Works great if you don't ever want to go to another Apple event. but we will. We'll be doing that, and then we will. We're going to have a camera down in Cupertino because there's no way Andy and Renee can get back up here. It's 2.5 hours away, and there will be a demo, I think. So we'll get them and their initial reactions to the new iPhone. I like the idea of being kind of off the list because I feel like it. I don't have to tell anybody if I like it or see if you like it. And you're on the people think, well, maybe he, and if you don't like, so I just want to be free to say what I think.
Yeah, I mean, you can also, I mean, I think it's safe to assume that the journalists on this list have built up so much equity with their audiences, they're probably not really concerned.
So. I hope
and the truth
the
is you know, as Christine was saying, like, you know, you say something nasty about an Apple product, you immediately get dogpiled on by 3,000 people who just bought it and think you're an idiot for not loving it as much as they do. And it's the reality of covering this stuff on the internet. Spectacularly, it's like talking about, you know, if you say anything bad about the Xbox One or the PlayStation 4 or, you know, the iPhone, you immediately get this, you know.
Well, there's fanboys in every business.
There are fanboys and there are fanboys.
I mean, this is true. There are fanboys and there are Apple fanboys, and then there's like the video game level. But no, I mean, there's a special breed of Apple lovers. And I count myself amongst them, you know. But I think what's different now is that for years, you know, and I think Apple fans still see themselves as like the underdogs, you know, like when Apple
that
was like
is
about
not
the business.
True anymore. You should stop feeling that.
Well,
way.
That's what I'm saying. But people still have this put upon feeling like they have to defend every aspect of the company because it's like it's still 1997 and it's about to go bankrupt. And it's like, you guys, it's the biggest company in the world. Like, it's okay. We can criticize these things and it's not going to mean the end of the world. It's not going to mean that like the Mac won't exist anymore or that we won't have our iPhones. But I think that a lot of fans still are in that kind of like pre, you know, 2005, 2006 Apple mentality, at least on the internet, which is interesting. But I think it's also, I mean, to Patrick's point, you build up equity with your audience. And at least from my experience, I think Apple is a lot more concerned about people who leak things.
And that I understand.
Control leaks, rather than people who give negative reviews.
Leaks are bad for Apple.
And even when you give a negative review, they're usually okay with it as long as you can back it up.
Right.
What they... And like, because I've had conversations with them before. Well, I've had conversations with them when I've been negative about certain things. Think, well, what's the problem? And I'll be very happy to enumerate the entire list. And they'll go, okay, cool. You know, but it's almost as if they don't just want an ad hoc. I don't like this because it's Apple. You know, they want to be a little more nuanced than that. And then they'll be like, okay.
Because I can remember being in a conversation about a very nuanced review and basically being told that I was an idiot and shouldn't have been allowed to review the product. I mean, so apparently they've mellowed.
Well,
they
must have mellowed some. Yeah, well, that's good. I don't doubt that at all. My experience, fortunately, hasn't been like that, but it's been more recent. But I know that at the same time, when I write negative things about other companies, they might ask for some feedback so they can improve. But it's never like an inquisition, like, why did you write this? You know what I mean? Like, they're just like, okay.
A smart company's gone beyond that. They're a little more subtle. So there are other events going on even before the Apple event, and we're going to talk about IFA, which is in Berlin. We've got a Motorola event coming up next week. In fact, all the smart companies are releasing stuff now. Because after September 9th, it's a whole new ball game. We'll talk more about that in just a second. From Mashable, Christina Warren is here. Always a pleasure to have you on the show, Film Girl.
Always happy to be here.
And, of course, my old buddy Patrick Norton. He's also a host of This Week in Computer Hardware with Ryan Schrout. What day is that? Is that Tuesdays, Fridays?
We record that on Thursday
night. Thursday night, that's right. And it's a welcome show on our network because it's the only show, I think, in existence that just talks about computer hardware obsessively.
I don't think it's the only one.
It's one of the few.
We hope it's one of the more entertaining ones. Yeah.
Our show today brought to you by my eyeglasses. Actually, I should show the pictures of Lisa. Lisa got her Warby box just the other day, and she was trying on glasses. And you found one you liked, right? All right. We're talking about Warby Parker. This is a really interesting company that Maybe you saw the 60 Minutes piece on Luxottica, the company that has basically taken over eyeglasses.
I don't actually have television.
Little Italian company that at one point said, you know, if we buy every other eyeglass frame company, we can charge an exorbitant amount of money for a cheap piece of plastic. And they've succeeded. But what I admire is this: the startup guys at Warby said, you know, there's got to be a better way to do this.
Right.
And we don't have to charge that much. And we can make you a great pair of glasses. Glasses at Warby Parker start at $95. That includes the lenses. When's the last time you got a pair of glasses?
Prescription lenses?
Prescription lenses.
That's pretty amazing.
Anti-glare coating and all. Progressive lenses available, too. They're a little more expensive. They start at $295, but they're using this digital freeform lens. Very advanced progressive technology. I really like it. That gives you a full field of vision. So the design, a very precise computer design. So what happens? You get the free Warby try-on. So here's what you do. You go to warbyparker.com. And you pick some glasses out. You're going to pick out five of them and get, they'll send you the home try-on kit. This is, you know, think about it. One of the things with glasses, you don't want to buy them sight unseen. You need to put them on your face. So they'll send you five frames and then you can try them on, show them to your friends and family. Oh, I like these. What do you think? Who is that behind those Warbys? Not quite me. No. But see, that's what you do. And you get your friends. I actually posted pictures of me on Google Plus trying on.
No.
There is superstition. No, that's wrong. Okay. Now, I like these. See, I'm a horn ring kind of guy. I like these. So here's the point. You go through these. You figure out which one you like. They include a special box and a prepaid shipping label. So you return it and you say, I want this one. They'll turn it around very fast. They'll do the prescription. All glasses include anti-reflective and anti-glare coating, a hard case, very nice hard case, and a clean cleaning cloth. And one of the things I really like, they partner with companies like Vision Springs. For every pair of glasses you buy, they send a pair to someone in need. So that's it's a pretty good company with a really great way of doing business. They make buying glasses fun, fast, easy, pain-free, and affordable with low price and wide selection of styles. You can have your, this is what I like. I'll have my clear glasses and I'll have my sunglasses in the car, both with my prescription at this price. Why not? Give Warby Parker a try. A stylish new pair of prescription glasses or sunglasses. Go to Warby Parker, W-A-R-B-Y, Parker, parker.com/twit for the free home try-on, and you'll get free three-day shipping on your final frame purchase, too. They turn it around very fast. I really am a fan. WarbyParker.com. Don't settle for overpriced, bland, monopolized eyewear. Just a few manufacturers that keep prices artificially high. No, go to Warby. You're doing a good thing for the planet. WarbyParker.com/twit. So we have a bunch of events to cover. I think we're going to do live coverage of everything. Why not? I don't want to be look like an Apple bigot. So September 3rd, which is what, 3 days, 4 days from today, Samsung Unpacked. Now, I have to say, when you've seen an Apple event, going to a Samsung event is a little bit of a step down.
Well, I'm just thinking of CES, where it's like we're going to do every product from every division that has anything to do with anything that might be in a home or an apartment or held by somebody anywhere. And it's like
those are terrible. But did you go? I bet you, Christina, because you're in New York. Did you go to the last Samsung Unpacked event, the Broadway show?
Oh my God, I was just about to bring that up. That was the most amazing event ever, and not in the way that they intended it to be amazing.
That was the one where they're showing off the Galaxy S4. Oh, my nails are drying, so I don't want to touch the phone.
It worked better live than it did in person, than it did like over the web. The idea was to create like a 50s musical sort of motif on it. The problem, however, is that most of the audience who's watching, either at home and even in the audience, because they were at Radio City, doesn't understand like the fact that this was a
theatrical event,
right? And that it was a riff on like, you know, 50s, 60s era comedy musicals.
Right.
So it played really, really awkwardly. And then apparently Samsung changed some lines in the script, which, you know, muffled the humor a little bit more. And then they invited everyone, literally, and their brother, second cousin, and like, you know, my best friend's, you know, boyfriend's girlfriend's brother's girlfriend, you know, from, like, it's like the Ferris Bueller line. Like, every person was there because they needed to fill up this space. The problem was that then there was like this huge bottleneck to get into the space. And then afterwards, you know, anybody who's wanting to look at the phones, you had to, you know, like, fight with 500 people, many of whom don't speak English, which is fine. But when you're trying to get in, be like, can I get a photo of this phone? It's like, okay, you know what? I'm just going to leave. It was chaotic, but it was also kind of amazing with the whole stage show thing. It was poor Will Chase. He really tried, but yeah.
I know, I kind of thought that people who were there might have had a different experience. Those of us watching at home didn't really get a sense of the theatricality
event. I mean, right. Being there in person, it was a lot better than looking at the live stream, but it was still, there was still awkwardness. I remember kind of turning to the people I was with and being like, is this really happening? Because it just felt so, it was just so funny and bizarre because you just don't expect that. You're just thinking, really, really? I mean, it was...
Nothing worse than bad, you know, not funny attempts to be funny. Right?
Yeah.
Bad humor. I mean, here we go. Put up a little of the audio on this. This will give you an idea of how terrible this was. Can you hear my audio, John?
The new Samsung Galaxy S4.
They're not going to give you a free phone, Justin.
Not asking for one, but I thought maybe you could find out if I can transfer all from my old phone to the new Galaxy.
It's like, why am I here? Why am I watching
you
this?
You want me to stop the entire presentation just so...
And who is this guy?
Transfer everything from your phone to the
and
Galaxy.
Why is there a car on its side on the stage?
Ryan, exactly.
And on and on and on. It was just, it was... it was like, what? And you know, if you've been to an Apple event, and then you see this. You go.
Look at that. That's what happens when all your bridesmaids are in Broadway shows. Awesome feature.
And you know, even if you only have two phones, you can still set up a great sounding two-channel system.
Plus, you can adjust the volume of each device.
And you can start at the music again right from where the group play leader stopped.
And one of the coolest
I was just checking to see if it was as bad as I remembered.
Yeah, it was.
The awesome thing to think about is what the price tag for this was.
Oh, my God.
Never mind.
And not only does group play let you share music.
So they're doing it in New York again. Is it Radio City Music Hall September 3rd?
No. So what they're doing it from Berlin, and then they are also live streaming it to China, or live streaming it to Korea, to Hong Kong, I guess, and live streaming it to New York. So that's what they've done the last two times when they've had the off-site events. So a bunch of people gather and sometimes have alcohol, sometimes don't. I hope they have alcohol this time, although it will be 8 in the morning.
8 a.m.? And you want what, Bloody Marys?
Heck yeah, man. I mean, Melissa, I mean, shoot. If I'm going to have to, like, watch through one of these things, I would at least like to have something going on, all I'm saying.
I remember the last event, they had a very lugubrious orchestra.
Yeah.
Playing very sleepy music. It made me want to go to sleep.
Right.
And you're at 8 a.m. in the, you know, you're, I mean, I think this might put you to sleep if they do that.
Right. So they're going to have the live stream, but they're, you know, getting everything out on that's the 3rd, right? That's Wednesday. Yeah, they're going to be doing all of that. And they will also have the stream people can tune into. So they will probably also have product in New York for people there to be able to get their hands on what that's what they did last year at IFA. And also for the Galaxy S5 event, they had satellite things where you could still touch and play with stuff. And then they had, you know, the live event from, in that case, it was in OUC.
It's too soon for an S6, right? I mean, we wouldn't see a Galaxy.
Yeah, no, this will be the Note 4. This will be the Note 4. And they pre-announced one of the watches last week, one of the new Galaxy or Gear Live watches, I guess, one of the new Gear watches.
Now, this is interesting. This is Tizen, right? This is not Android Wear.
Right.
A phone. You don't need a phone for it.
Exactly. They might have an Android Wear component there, too. I'm not really sure, but they're going to have the new, you know, Gear device, the Note 4. And I would not be surprised if we saw a couple of other wearables. And, you know, they just did their big tablet revamp, but they might do more tablets again. Because I'm going to be honest, I like the latest high-end Samsung tablets, but they have so many various models and series, the Tab, the Note, the Tab Pro, the whatnot. Like, I don't even know what they all are. They've got like 16 various types of devices.
You know, that is the difference between Samsung and Apple. Apple picks the one best thing and says, this is all you need, just this. Don't think about anything else. Samsung says, whatever you want. We'll make it any size you want. Make it any shape you want. Whatever you want. And I think those are two reasonable market strategies. And I mean, some people want choice. Well, some people want to be told what to do.
But this is also, I mean, I don't know if it's choice so much as just an overwhelming array of options. I mean, the running joke on This Week in Computer Hardware has been like, okay, so, you know, Asus has announced 34 motherboards this spring. MSI has announced 34 motherboards this spring. And it gets to the point where
sometimes it's too much.
Well, you're trying to figure out, like, why is this tablet $150 less than this tablet? Right. Is it the memory? Is it Wi-Fi? Is it G3? Is it? Oh wait, it's LG 4. No, it's not LG. It's, and you spend a lot of time beating your head against a wall trying to figure out which one you should actually buy.
Here's an interesting rumor. We knew that Samsung was doing a virtual reality headset. Everybody is.
Oh yeah. That's going to be there too. We're expecting. Yeah.
You think? And this is Project Moonlight.
I think that's what it's called. I mean, the idea with this is to, I think, basically almost be like you can drop in your Galaxy device and then have like the equivalent of an Oculus, which
makes that's sense. Like the Google Cardboard.
Precisely.
No,
precisely.
It's like a stereoscope from the 19th century.
Kurt, will you bring me my Google Cardboard? It's on my desk in my office.
That was how the first prototype for the Oculus came about, was that they basically built the Google Cardboard thing and used it with an iPhone. And that was what they did at USC. And that was like the first couple of prototypes before they built it into the unit for the Oculus.
So there is rumor that this will work with the Note 4, this Project Moonlight.
Which would make a ton of sense. I mean, that would be a big reason to kind of push that.
I thought this was actually a very funny slap from Google. They gave this out at the Google I.O. conference. It was a flat piece of cardboard, which you then fold up into, you're right, a ViewMaster. And you can put any Android phone in here that has the software on it. There's some special software. And then you have a little ViewMaster button here. And this is all like $150 to make. And it does wow. But, you know, it's as good as an Oculus. Excuse me, but it's as good as an Oculus Rift. Right,
it's not bad. It's not hooked up
to a game, right? So maybe that's the difference.
Right. Well, and the new Oculus, the new one that just came out, has a little bit higher resolution screen than past ones did, and the big thing is that
but it's
the
not,
motion.
This is 1080p.
Well, you're right, but it's going to be. There's a little bit better. It's better for motion, I guess, is what I would say. Kind of with that one, you know, when you're kind of turning around and looking at things, it doesn't have that kind of depth of space where you feel like you can almost go, you know. Turn to your left, turn to your right to kind of see things and get that kind of field of vision thing that you have with the Oculus. But it's not bad. I mean, I think that for a lot of people, for developers especially, it's a really good way of kind of getting a chance to try out developing for these types of headsets, which if everything is to be believed is going to become, you know, a much bigger trend. You know, Sony's obviously getting into it with Oculus and whatnot. I think that it's a really affordable way to have people start developing stuff for that. So, I mean, that's cool.
Does anybody really want this? It makes me throw up. I mean, literally.
Well, the first generation Oculus, I mean,
Chris wants it. Our intern Chris
a bunch of gamers I know.
He's a gamer.
We're desperately trying to hang on. So we had two people like when we were
Did
running
they try
around
it,
the
though?
3. Yes. Yes.
And it didn't make them nauseous?
No. I mean, Ryan Trapp. Vomit, you know, a couple of the guys from F3 Games. Vomit on almost like one guy literally like put it on and literally like 2 minutes off and then basically dropped to the floor and crawled out of the game testing lab, right? Because some people, you know.
I'm told, though, a guy who's a Navy pilot said, you take a washcloth in ice cold water and you put it on the back of your neck right there.
But this
and
is,
then you won't vomit.
This is what we. This is still not what we call a positive experience with a product,
If one person in 100 can use it, that's not a product.
It wasn't one person, right? But in extremely limited anecdotal testing, it was like 50-50. Like you 50-50. Either got through it or you're just like. And then you took the thing off and you ran like hell for the nearest garbage can. So, the second generation, but they've reduced the latency. They've increased.
You think
the
it was latency that caused
it? It's a huge part of it was latency.
I thought what caused it is the fact that you're seeing motion, but you're not moving. I mean, it's a classic, you know, car sickness. There's no latency in my car.
No, but there's a if we could add latency to your car, you would be that
really
much sicker.
Get sick. The most sick I ever got, I was coming down to the Screensavers riding the Golden Gate Transit playing Quake on my laptop. I have never, ever felt worse in my life.
Right.
Oh, my God. I can't even imagine. No, the new Oculus is so much better compared to the first one for the latency and the movement. They worked with Valve, I think it was, to get it so that it's greatly, greatly reduced. And I love it. I mean,
you don't get nauseous?
No, not with the new one. Not at all.
Okay.
I think it's awesome. In fact, all the hacks around it, if I could spend all day, and unfortunately I can't because I'm supposed to do other things, but I would love to just spend all day hacking stuff with the Oculus. Like Netflix team put together something where they have like a whole interface for the Oculus. I mean, I would just like to spend time like putting together a whole, like run once sort of configuration file so that other people could easily kind of go into a loader and enjoy that sort of stuff. Because there's so many hacks available and it's a fun community.
I really want virtual reality. I mean, I don't think that I don't want this. I want the metaverse. Neil Stevenson's immersive alternate universe that I can hang out in. But putting a big headset on my head has not really gotten me there yet.
No, and well, that was so funny. Like,
I need to jack in.
Well, if you were jacking in, you thought beta testing was bad on cell phones. Just wait until somebody puts a.
I want a port in my neck.
Fiber port in your neck.
I want a port in my neck, but the early connectors will be big, so you'll have to have a big port. So I might wait for this a little bit smaller.
Yeah, you want to wait for it to be smaller, and you want to make sure that it'll have enough bandwidth, because the last thing you want is to have to get the surgery a second time to install the upgrade.
And the worst thing, you spend $10,000 to get the port put in your head. The first time you jack in, you get horrendously nauseous, and you go, oh, never mind.
And then the standard that you got, put in, it turns out to be the wrong type of Ethernet connector, right? Yeah. We go back.
It's USB 5. I only have USB 4.
No, it's token ring instead of
I don't think this may not happen in my lifetime. Probably in yours for sure, in Christina's, right? I mean, this is going to happen.
I don't think so.
No?
I think at some point, at some level it will. Maybe not for everything, but I think for something. I mean, it's getting so much better so quickly.
I would love.
I mean, the fact that you can just use phones to power this stuff, it's insane. Yeah,
that's amazing. This cardboard thing works is truly
fairly
amazing.
Immersive virtual reality is I think that part where you're putting on your goggles or whatever it is, that's one thing. But the
what kind of soda would you like?
You know, if there's a anything with caffeine.
Anything with caffeine. I'll have what he's having. Christina, what would you like?
And thank you, Jeff.
What are you drinking?
Coca-Cola.
Wow. We're a heavily sugar-laden caffeinated.
What's the black can? Is that Coke? I actually have given up on soda again, which has been
fascinating. Oh, what would you like? Black coffee?
No. Well,
I can get you an espresso.
Anything with caffeine is good. No. At this point, like it's really weird because when you're not on a constant drip of Diet Coke or
you
Coke
feel better,
Zero,
don't you?
Well, yeah. I mean, the fact that it's not vaporizing the minerals in your digestive system before they actually get in your body, which is good, right?
Yeah.
But actually, it tastes really awful if you're having like one and you haven't had one in a week you're like,
yeah. You haven't built up your resistance to whatever that is, carbolic acid.
It's not even let's not even go down this particular
rat hole. So IFA, IFA, you're not going to Berlin either, huh, Christina? You're stuck.
I'm not. We sent someone else.
You
I'm
are
stuck.
Stuck
here.
They will not. That's because you're so valuable to Mashable. They won't let you go.
No.
You're going to a new new office though. I saw Lance Ulanoff's. You're packing up.
Yeah, we just moved Friday, and we're going to be in a brand new office. So it's
where
huge
is it?
And it's very nice.
You're leaving the Flatiron building? That's a nice building.
It's a nice looking building.
We weren't in the Flatiron. We were across the street from it. So we are now actually still in the same area, but a little bit further up. We're on 17th and 5th Avenue.
Nice.
So it's huge. I've been at Mashable for 5 years, and when I started, there was no office. We were all remote working.
Yeah.
And then there was a co-working space very briefly in Union Square, and then there was a space that we lasted in about a year, and then we've been at our current location for 3 years, and now we're in this space, and this is like our first real space. I'm like, I go into that. I'm like, oh my God, I'm a grown up now because it's, it must feel like when you guys built, the twit house, the brick house, because it's just,
Feel like, not only do I feel like a grown-up, I feel like a broke grown-up. So that's exciting. Would you like a Mexican Coke?
I would love a Mexican
this
Coke.
This is all the cane sugar and none of the...
Jealous, yeah.
So somebody says, I don't know the difference between nauseous and nauseated. I don't. What is the difference?
So nauseated is the verb, and then nauseous is the descriptor. So you are, I'm feeling nauseated, and
it
this
makes you
me nauseous.
So I used, exactly. did I use that correctly, editor?
I don't remember what you said. probably not, but I almost never say it correctly. I almost always say I'm nauseous rather than I'm nauseated. But,
right. It makes you nauseous, but you are nauseated.
Exactly.
Thank you. IFA is kind of the CES of
mobile.
Mobile?
Yeah. No, it's kind of like, well, no, because Mobile World Congress is the CES of mobile. So IFA is kind of like.
It's a CES. It's Berlin's answer to CES. It was originally basically a radio show. Was it like International Telefunken? So I'm not kidding. Many in the 30s. It's been in Berlin ever since. And now it's it was the International Funkausstellung Berlin back to 1924 when it would showcase the latest developments in radio. Funkausstellung means podcast. Many people don't know that. No, it means radio show. You could be a podcast or a funkausstellung. Which would you rather be?
Funkass.
Totally. Totally funkass.
Fire up Bootsy.
I'm going to call myself. Welcome to the Twit Funkausstellung Broadcasting Network.
That's so much fun.
I would like. I've never been to IFA. Have you been to IFA? I'd love
to go.
I have
not.
I want to go.
I'd love to go, but I'll probably go next year. But no, I mean, I've never been. But there's going to be a bunch of stuff announced. Apparently, it's all going to be about wearables. There's a big.
This would be the show to go to this year. This is the one, right? Is this a big breakthrough year? I think so.
Yeah. I think we're in it.
Smartwatches?
For a lot of emerging stuff.
Or something haven't seen. I just don't find myself getting super excited about Android Wear or a smartwatch. It's just.
I'm excited about the new Moto X, whatever they call it, X Plus One.
Mm-hmm.
That will be announced September 4th.
That is going to be in Chicago. I don't. What is Motorola doing? I don't get it.
So you I could don't be. Get it. So where? I mean, where? I mean, right now you should either be at BlackRock or Berlin. Or
well, you're coming down from BlackRock, or you're part of the crew that's cleaning up after BlackRock.
But imagine, okay, so you're trying to get a bunch of journalists to go to your event.
The day before, it's in New York.
Exactly. And everybody else will either be in Berlin or New York to be watching, either doing the live streams and the hands-on or in Berlin. So instead of going to New York, which would make sense, you say, no. Now you need to come out to Chicago.
Well, I mean, Motorola corporate headquarters is in Chicago,
isn't it?
Yeah, but that doesn't make any difference. Motorola usually has their events in New York. So to me, that's completely irrelevant. Like, they're doing it at the whatever one of the big centers is in Chicago, which is, to me, like, most companies are smart enough to move wherever their event is located to better accommodate press.
Yeah, I mean, Motorola is still owned by Google. Thought. They could do it somewhere else.
Maybe they figure, since, you know, they're not going to compete with Samsung and LG and Sony at IFA, and they're not going to compete with, you know, Apple. Maybe they figured, you know, we announce a new phone, we send out a bunch of review units, we save a bunch of money, we do it at the corporate office.
It's fine with me. I don't care. I want one. They're going to make them in. Now remember, the Moto X had the customizable backs. Unfortunately, they closed the U.S. factory where they had the Moto Maker factory, and these will now be made in Mexico. So they won't be as quick, but they will still have wood and, according to one leak, leather. You can have a leather backed phone.
Take me to the Folsom Street Fair with my new phone.
You don't have to wear chaps with these. It's okay. So leather, solid black, pearly white, and bamboo.
The bamboo phones are pretty.
I had the wooden Moto X on. Loved it. I actually think the Moto X was the little phone that could. It was the best, one of the best phones of the year, and got not as much attention as it deserved.
I liked the Moto X a lot. I actually really liked the Moto G, if I'm being honest. Not so much for me, but I think that for a phone in at that price point, that was one of the best phones.
4G LTE, under $200.
Is that what you're using?
Yeah.
Exactly.
I just refused to buy my iPhone 4S was just, it was gone. And there was no way I was paying $600 for an iPhone, you know, 6-8 weeks before they launched the iPhone 6.
One of the the G is probably going to be updated as well. Yeah. Now, I'm not sure what the G will have. The X Plus One and the next X, a couple of things they had to fix. The camera wasn't very good. Rumors are they'll come out with that 13-megapixel camera that everybody else is
using. There's also issues. I mean, there's issues on Android there's endemic structural issues that are being fixed inside of Android, but Android
software issues.
Yeah, I mean, and a lot of the Android camera apps are just atrocious. And because yes. Apple's so far ahead, because when they launched the iPhone, it being a camera was a big part of it, and it being the best possible camera was a big part of it. And Apple being Apple, they sort of locked down the best possible sensors.
I just saw a study that camera is the number one thing people want to do with a smartphone sure. is take pictures.
Oh, totally. I mean, when we do you know, like studies with our audience, and we say what's the one thing you want from a phone, camera is number one and battery is number two. Like, those are always the top two things.
Wow.
But when they built Android, they didn't really occur that the camera was going to be that important a decision. And so they were several years behind in making that assumption and building out the pipeline and getting access to the latest sensor technology. So
no, yeah, and you see that with a hyperlapse. You know, Instagram's new app
that's came pretty out sweet,
which is amazing. And the technology behind it, to me, is as incredible. In fact, makes the app that much more incredible. All the really, really great tech they put into it, and they want to bring it to Android, but they're going to have to wait for core Android things to change so that they can use the gyroscope if it's on the phone and have access to some of their parts. Because it's not a matter of, oh, we want to, you know, blow off Android users. It's a matter of, yeah, Android actually doesn't let us do this stuff that iOS does, because as Patrick is saying, you know, Apple's cared a lot more about the camera for a lot longer, and Android is just now kind of, you know, getting with the program. Mm-hmm. So
hyperlapse is kind of, you know, as exciting as it is, it's a one trick pony, and you can stop putting hyperlapse pictures in my Instagram page. Thank you very much. The idea is you can do time lapse, but it also does smoothing of bumps and bounces. So you could walk down a street or drive down a street, do the time lapse, and it would be smoothed out. Exactly. It does look great, but let's face it, it's still a one trick pony. I mean, time lapse is nice, but you don't want to use it all the time.
No. I mean, I think that it's good for certain sorts of scenic stuff, walking things. I think sports actually is really cool. I time-lapsed a tennis game during the U.S. Open. And I was at the U.S. Open. I had really good seats. And so I time-lapsed a game between Venus Williams and someone else, and was able to take like a 6 minute.
Who cares who else was there? Venus was there.
I'm just envisioning the takedown orders if you do that, like NFL or MLB.
Oh, I know. You can't. At World Cup, you weren't allowed.
Yeah.
Were you panning back and forth to see the ball?
I was actually far enough back to get the entire thing in frame, and so I was able to get a 6 minute game condensed down to 30 seconds. I put it on YouTube, and yeah, so far the U.S. Open hasn't come down on me for it, so we'll see.
No, they won't.
But I mean, it was a really cool thing, and so I got to thinking, okay, how cool would this be during, you know, the World Cup or during football or during other types of sports, you know, to hyperlapse movement, because if you did want to go back and forth, it would smooth it out. Yeah, here you go. It's a really cool thing to kind of watch. So,
all right, yeah. I believe that hyperlapse, the Instagram folks said that the L version of Android, which is imminent this fall, will allow them to do the stuff they need to do for hyperlapse.
I'm not sure. That sounds about right, but I'm not sure.
They just need access to the accelerometer in a way that they can.
Exactly. You're right. Right. Because that's what they're doing to do the smoothing
That's kind of interesting. So they're doing, in effect, like optical image stabilization post facto.
Well, no, they're doing it in real time.
Oh, they are doing it in real time.
They're doing it in real time. And so how they're doing that is that typically with like a Steadicam mount setup and like a digital, you know, real time mount setup, what you would do is you would capture the motion of every single thing that's happening. And that's really expensive and requires a lot of processing power. But what they found is that if you use the gyroscope on the camera to use that and measure, to take measurements from the gyroscope and then extrapolate, I guess, the movements from there, then you can apply it to an algorithm, which will then let you smooth things out. So, and it matches up really, really well. So it's an incredibly smart thing. They put a post on their Instagram's engineering blog, went into depth about how they
really
do all this. And it's super fascinating. And when you read that, you're thinking, you're right. You know, this is a one-trick pony. You're right. These people are overusing this. But I feel like the technique that's in this app and the sorts of things that they are kind of uncovering with their cinema algorithm and with some of their other things could be very, very cool for future projects, you know, because that's the idea that you can do a moving time lapse thing on your camera is insane. And that they're able to do it all in real time in software and then also lets you select how quickly and how slowly you want the time lapse to work. And then they'll alter the algorithm based on what speed you select is just incredibly cool.
The thing that I find intriguing, and I don't know if they're related, but, you know, it was only a few weeks ago, Microsoft Research showed off their first-person hyperlapse videos.
Yes.
And I just love this because, well, Microsoft had it in the lab, but within 3 weeks, Instagram says, oh, yeah, we can do that on a phone. And well, they got, and it's done.
Well, they've been working on it, I guess. You know,
is it the same people? Or I mean, how did
No. It's but I think that what had happened, I mean, the guy that was one of the engineers at Instagram, his thesis at Stanford was around this idea of the gyroscope for doing stabilization. So he'd actually been doing that for a while. But I think that internally at Instagram, they've been working on this since February. So it's not uncommon for people to be doing things kind of, you know, at the same time. But the difference, I guess, is that, you know, Microsoft has one of the best research departments ever. I think we've talked about this before, but right. they don't do a great job of always productizing it, whereas Instagram, you know, was able to actually put out a product.
It's pretty 3 weeks later. It's pretty amazing. Anyway, getting back to the X Plus One, we got a little sidetracked. I do hope they'll have a better camera.
Yes.
But as you point out, it's really about software.
Yeah, well, it's also, I mean, you know, like I love the Moto G. You know, running the Google camera app is a small improvement over the native Motorola app on the camera. But there's also issues, you know, some pretty serious issues with the cameras themselves.
That one has not as good a sensor. But I do hope that the X Plus One will. It will apparently be much bigger. The last Motorola X was 4.7, which is a nice size, but it was only 720p. Mm-hmm. Some are saying, rumors are, it might be as big as 5.2 inches. And I love this, front-facing speakers. That's something the HTC One has that makes a big difference in the sound quality coming out of that phone. I love the HTC One's front-facing speakers. So this is another one that you're going to want to look at. The Samsung Galaxy Note 4 will be, what, 12 inches, 15, 108? How big is this going to be?
Yeah, that's a really good question.
Yeah.
The current one is what, 5.5, 6?
Five, or five, six. I think
it's it's a little bigger than five. And of course, the Lumia 1520, my late lamented Lumia 1520, was 6 inches. I kind of like that size.
I
don't mind a big one.
Somebody handed me a Samsung Note 2, and I was, you know, and I'd been carrying an iPhone, and it feels like a dinner tray, a lunch tray.
You get used to that.
Well, yeah, and that was like the first 3 days was like, what is the giant thing in my pocket? Oh, it's the phone. And then, you know, I'm using it for.
I ask that question all the time.
That makes one of us.
In your pocket, or are you just happy to see me?
I'm just going
to
move right past that because there's no safe place to go on on this podcast with that one.
But this doesn't look that big on my head, does it?
It looks pretty big on your head. But the problem is when you go back to the iPhone at this point, and you're like, oh. It's no wonder small. I have, you know, and you're sitting there and you're going like this, and you spent 2 weeks not expanding every web page up, or you've dealt with the fact there's so many, like I'm so frustrated with so many of the web publishing systems that automatically generate an unflexible, you know, we have a mobile version of the website. I can't use it because I can't find anything, or it's locked down with 6-point type and I can't read it on an iPhone. But and it was funny to realize that was one of the nice things about going to this is that a much bigger screen. And suddenly a 5-inch screen seems really, really reasonable or a necessity for next generation.
I think that's one of the reasons Apple, I hope, I know they're going to do a bigger screen. I hope they will do not only a 4.7. 4.7 is like the sweet spot, but I would love to see a 5.5-inch, and I would be very quick to get in line for a 5.5-inch. Absolutely. All right, so that's September 3rd is Samsung. September 4th is Moto. Sony's going to have announcements about a new tablet and smartphone. We know that they're doing an Xperia, what is it, Xperia X3? I don't know what their next generation is.
Or Z3 or something.
Z3 tablet compact. So this is not the day to buy a new phone.
No, this is not the week to buy me. I think, Patrick, I think your solution of buying the Moto G was actually pretty genius. That's a really, really good
point. Yeah, the cheapest phone you could find as a stopgap.
Well, and it turned out to be a really great
phone. It's a good phone.
It's a really good phone. It's a fantastic phone. And having the 4G version meant I could also put SD cards into it, micro SD cards into it, so I could have 64 or 32 gigabytes. Nice. Ironically, though, it also underlined all of the problems that Android has. The camera's problematic. Class 10 micro SD cards wouldn't work. And, you know, by the
what
time
did you
I
have
bought
to
it.
Get?
Well, you could either I could either go back and try to find an older SD
card. Slower is
better. Well, it was by the time I got through TechSupport, they're like, "Well, that's fixed," and I'm like, "Great!" I'm like, "How's it fixed?" Well, there's a and KitKat 4.4.4. I'm like, "Great!" I'm like, "Where do I download it?" Well, AT&T is going to have to send it. I'm like, "I didn't buy the phone from AT&T. I bought the phone from you." And they're like, "Well, you know, on Android updates are released according to the And I'm just sitting there. I'm like.
I have 444 on my Moto X. So
I have 444 on this now, but it came several weeks after. Like I was on the phone, they're like, "Well, it's being released with Verizon next week." Doesn't really help me. Well, maybe it's on the website, and we walk through the website together. Like, "Oh, it's not on the website." Well, eventually AT&T will release it. This is not the tech support moment you want to have, where the tech support person, when you've been elevated to level 2 tech,
goes, "That Android fragmentation problem."
Yeah, and it's having dealt with some developers recently, because a whole bunch of applications that wouldn't run on 4.3 suddenly run on 4.4.
I have to say, though, they've made great strides. I feel like Android gets better and better and better, and it's getting better at a faster clip than iOS.
I will agree with that, but Google also has to start taking the developers and the store seriously.
Yeah,
because Google, like, what was the Flappy Bird, his new game,
Hammer Flappy Hammer
Flappy.
What is it? No, there's a hammer swing. What is it? Copter, hammer, copter?
Swing copter.
Swing copter, swing hammer.
Like the day
swing
of,
hammer, swing copter.
The day of the release of the game, there were like 15 copycats that were higher ranked than the actual original game. Like I've run into stuff where it's...
You know what's worse than that is the Microsoft App Store for the Metro. Have you... There's an $8.99 VLC app that says, shows you how to download VLC. Right. VLC logo.
I would say that's worse, but when you run into this where I can obviously caveat emptor, not be paying close enough attention, and there's companies that exist to spoof the names of popular software companies and release crapware that then attempts to, like, the one that was really great was I missed the one that was like the Tokamoka. There's a children's applications, but like there were there's two or three different companies that basically name themselves or name in their titles to try to emulate that. But one, like, I was trying to find, like, a train simulator. And one of the train simulators I download was hitting me with notices that were basically trying to get me to either do some sort of a phishing scam and or some sort of a PayPal scam. And it's like, this crap is everywhere in the Google Play Store. Yeah. And I've never, as somebody who mocked Steve Jobs, Steve's like, we're not going to have, what am I saying?
There will not
be
any porn.
There will not be any. And I was just like, oh, so you're going to remove the browser? Because it's connected to the internet, or are you going to start?
Do that. The browser is rated 18 plus because you can go to porn, which cracks me up.
Let's save the children.
Yeah. Anyway, don't buy a phone now. Watch and see and learn. And if you have to buy a Moto G, there is also supposedly a Nexus 6 in the works. The Nexus 5 is still.
I thought
the
they
most,
canned the no? Nexus 6.
Christina's going, no.
Yeah. Everybody, because
I've heard the same thing. I've heard it's been canned too. I have no idea. Usually it would have been already announced by now. So I don't know.
Maybe, because remember, they sold Motorola. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're waiting. I don't know.
But they've done it with LG the last two times. So I don't know. I don't know. I mean, maybe we'll see another LG device that'll kind of step in the way for the Moto or for the Nexus line. I know that they seem to be really serious about the Android One or One Android thing. Maybe that's what they're going to shift their
One Android to rule them all.
Their device focus. Building lower cost based devices for the rest of the world and letting other people just kind of do maybe the Google Play editions for some of the other phones. I don't know.
In fact, the choice now among Android phones is very good. And it will be better after next week. I think there are really some excellent choices. The HTC One still is a great phone. I use this One Plus, which is a great phone. There are a lot of good choices.
Yeah.
This was $350. I mean, it's cheap.
It was under $200.
All right.
4G, LTE.
You win.
No. But it's like, you've got a better camera on that. You've got a bigger screen on that.
Yeah.
It's amazing how much phone you get for how little money.
Mike Elgin is here, our news director, and he has a look at what's ahead this week. Mike?
The week ahead is a big one for new phone and wearable product launches. The first Android One phones are expected to hit India this week. Android One is a low-cost smartphone reference platform and program from Google designed to bring auto-updating smartphones to emerging markets for around $100 or less. Micromax may launch the very first Android One phone tomorrow, which is Monday, September 1st. Samsung is holding a big product launch on Wednesday, September 3rd, which is taking place simultaneously in Berlin, Beijing, and New York. Everyone is expecting a Galaxy Note 4 phablet, and they could also unveil their virtual reality headset, which is created in partnership with Oculus VR. Sony is holding a press event in Berlin on Wednesday as well. Rumors say they'll announce an Xperia Z3 flagship smartphone and other products. Asus is expected to unveil an Android Wear smartwatch on Wednesday that's similar to the Samsung Gear Live and LG G Watch, but a lot cheaper. Motorola is planning announcements for Thursday, September 4th in Chicago. We're expecting the Moto X Plus One, a successor to the Moto X phone, plus the official release of the Moto 360 smartwatch. HTC should announce the world's first 64-bit Android phone called the Desire 820 on Thursday. Huawei is rumored to be launching a new 6-inch high-resolution screen also on Thursday. And even Dyson, the vacuum cleaner company, has an announcement Thursday, most likely a brand-new vacuum cleaner robot. All that is happening before the 5-day IFA conference officially begins in Berlin on Friday, September 5th. That's the week ahead. Back to you, Leo.
My goodness, what a week ahead. You can catch it all. Every detail, every drip and drop of announcement at Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 1700 UTC with Mike Elgin on Tech News Today. And, of course, at 4 p.m. Pacific, our evening news program, Tech News Tonight with Sarah Lane, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 2300 UTC. Our show today brought to you by Carbonite Online Backup. If you're using a computer, you've got something on it you don't want to lose. Just think about it. Just a little thought exercise. A little thought Gedanken. What do they call it?
Gedanken's experiment.
Gedanken's experiment. If with me, as Einstein did, and imagine what would happen if poof, your hard drive went away. Would you be prepared? What would you lose? The great American novel sitting on your hard drive, a classical music composition, pictures of your baby's first steps, or your wedding pictures. Make sure you get that stuff backed up. And if you're in business, losing that hard drive could mean you lose your customer list, your accounts receivable, your suppliers. You got to back it up to get it back. And Carbonite's the way to do it. Automatic, so you don't have to think about it. Continuous whenever you're online. And it's to the cloud. And by the way, I know everybody's worried about privacy and security. Of course it's secure on the way to the cloud, but you can also use Trust No One encryption to make sure no one can see it. So you have absolute privacy. They've got plans for every business, whether it's an individual computer. And it's, by the way, very affordable flat rate pricing, $59.99 for a single computer. Mm-hmm. Or buy 2 years, get 20% off. 3 years, get 30% off. And they don't measure. They don't count the data. There's no data caps on this. So that's a good deal. That's $5 a month for everything on your Mac or your PC. They do have business plans, including a great Carbonite appliance that gives you the best of both worlds, local and off-site backup. Check it out. Try it free. No credit card needed at Carbonite.com. And when you use the offer code TWIT, you'll get 2 bonus months free when you decide to buy. You got to back it up to get back. Do it right with Carbonite. So you're going to go to the event, the Samsung event, Christina? Are you ready?
I am.
8
totally,
a.m.?
Totally.
Totally prepared?
8 a.m. Yes. Like I said, I hope they'll have Bloody Marys or mimosas or something. You know, got to kick it into gear. If you got to be there that early. I mean, I don't know. Because at that point, I'm like, should I go to bed or should I just stay up?
Oh, come on. 8 a.m.?
No. You have to remember, she's in New York. The bars close at 4. Oh. It's a different lifestyle.
Exactly. No, and you're right. No, I mean, it's early. It's not that bad. So, no, it'll be good. And Samsung always announces a lot of stuff, and they always have very cool things that, that's the great thing about Samsung. They have so much money, and they are in so many different industries that mm-hmm. I would not put it past them to just come out with something that everybody goes, huh, really? Okay. You know, because...
Why not?
You never know. I mean, they have robots. They have an entire robotic division, so you never know.
Oh, robot. I'd take a robot.
I'm just not entirely...
I would like a robot.
I don't know. That was one of the things at CES where it was like, okay, the 4K content and the 4K screen battles, and it's like, oh, this washer and dryer, this dryer will text me when the laundry's done. It always seems like they're trying so desperately to figure out how many additional failure points they can put into what used to be fairly functional appliances for long periods of time.
I did buy, what was it called? I got the double. There's a new one I bought. It's not here yet. The Lumo or whatever, the one that watches you and talks to you. What was that called? I'm a sucker for this crap. You know, $500 and they took the money. Like, even though I probably never see that robot, but it looks It looks really cool. It's not.
I had an Ibo.
It's not. Well, okay. So the woman who's doing this, I met at a food camp. She did these really cute little personal robots that would interact with people. Wow. What's the now? I hope I remember the name because I bought one, and I'll never know when I don't get it or something. But anyway, so she's got a track record of doing really great robots. This one sits on the counter and looks at you, follows you around, talks to you, recognizes your voice. I'm a sucker.
Now I'm looking for it. Lumo? The Lumo, Canadian Kickstarter?
No. What was the name of that robot? It was a four letters.
Pomo?
Pomo?
I'm not kidding. I'm like, there's two to Pomo
Jibo,
Inc.
Jibo. Thank you, Effin Dunn. Our chat room to the rescue. They are my brains now that I am getting old. JIBOMYJIBO.com. It's a family robot, friendly, helpful, and intelligence. It's from Cynthia Breziel, who has done these before. And yes, I sunk $500. Now watch, though. This is, see, I think Samsung, this is, look, it's cute.
It is cute.
It's cute. Like, and it blinks.
Oh, that's, oh.
See?
That's,
it looks like Sauron.
See? It's the eye of Sauron on your, in your living room
I
table.
Love it. No, it's like the Luxo lamp for Pixar. It's like Pixar.
It's very
Luxo
it's
lamp.
Very personable. Do you have audio on this?
Tracking system engaged.
And photos.
Arming lasers.
So you put down your camera.
Targeting system.
You are awesome. So bad. Look, Carrie Couric loves it.
He's a hands-free helper.
It's gotta be good.
And he'll talk to you back, so you don't have to skip a beat.
Excuse me, Anne?
Yes, Jibo.
Melissa just sent a reminder that she's picking you
up. I hope he talks like that.
Half an hour.
I would very much like a robot that talks like that.
Don't unplug me, Leo. Leo.
Leo.
I'm sorry, Dave.
Dave.
I read your lips. I hear you were thinking of disconnecting me, Dave.
I was going to say, can we give it the voice of Hal? Because that would actually be amazing.
I would do that.
Where'd you go?
I will record that for them.
There you are.
There you are, Julie.
The closest thing.
I've been looking for you.
Well, it's funny, right? Because, like, on one hand, these could be amazing, and one of the reasons they're doing these in Japan is because they have this aging population that either their partners have died and they want to interact with.
The aging population.
Well, you're a little younger on the curve than the aging population that they're targeting, like Sony's targeting the robots at, or Honda is, pardon me.
Well,
but there's also some level that's just a little.
Can you order some takeout for me?
Sure thing.
I want to tell my robot, can you order some takeout for me?
And even
sure thing, Dave.
I want you to be able to tell your robot to order your takeout and have the takeout actually show up.
Absolutely.
Do you think it's just really like they took the brains of a Teddy Ruxpin and put it in a robot?
It sounds exactly like Teddy Ruxpin now that you mention it.
Yeah.
And he's not just.
Well, of course, now I'm thinking of a movie.
Nor is he.
Well, there was that Bicentennial Man with Robin Williams.
Not the movie I'm thinking of.
Awful movie.
Awful. What was
there? Was AI, artificial intelligence.
AI, that's the one.
Yeah, that was the little boy.
Evil has never been so cute. That's good. I like that. Movie in our chat room came up with that slogan.
This little bot of mine.
Jibo.
So that was $500?
Yeah, see, Cynthia is actually. She's a pioneer of social robotics at the MIT Media Lab. She's made robots before. I thought she's invented this stuff before. She's not making it up.
No. It looks fantastic. It looks like it'll be amazing, and eventually it'll have wheels and follow you around the house. But I'm just a little.
Well, that's what I like about this. It can't follow you around the house
yet.
Well, that was what I loved about my Ibo. I mean, that thing was so much fun, you know. And it, when it would like get tired, you know, it would find its way to wherever the charger was and charge itself, and you know, it would do little jumps. And I mean, that was like not the worst $800 I've ever spent. It certainly,
wow,
you know,
is that expensive? Wow. Do you still have it?
Yeah, I do. And a couple of batteries. But most of them, because they're Lion, have lost power. So I'm going to, I'm having to track down replacement batteries, which is kind of a pain. But yeah, I got it at Sharper Image in 2003, I want to say. And I justified it by saying an actual dog would cost about as much. So
yeah. And they die.
Right.
This will never die. It might run out of batteries, though.
I'm sorry. I don't know. It's interesting.
I'm excited about my
Debo. I hope you get yours. I hope it shows up.
Well, a lot of people are saying they were aiming for $100,000 on Indiegogo. They raised almost $2 million.
Now they have to.
Oh, wait. There's 14 days. Doesn't close until September 14th, 2014.
Still have a chance to buy a Jibo.
I'm sure my wife will be thrilled when she sees that on the credit card.
You can come visit my Jibo. This has been an interesting project. By the way, Mashable said Jibo isn't an appliance. It's a companion, one that can interact and react with its human owners in ways that delight,
says Mashable.
On one
hand, it's the idea of having something as entertaining as a cat without the vomit or the litter box is tempting, but
yeah.
Will it mouse?
And then you just wonder, right, but then you wonder, are you going to get bored, you know? Or is it going to be, people in the chat were mentioning the Chumby, right? And
Nabba's Tog. I do miss my Nabba's Tog.
You remember the Chumby? That was like bad UI. Yeah, I had like...
It was like a bean bag with a screen in it.
Exactly. But it had all these widgets, and the idea behind it was great, but the software was never really executed. And then Sony eventually came out with one. I think they called it the Dash, and it was slightly better, but then that was too late.
Had that too.
And then I wonder about these things. I'm like, these concepts are so good, but the software is what is so crucial to making these things work.
This is what I was thinking about the other day. I want to be able to be in my environment, wherever it is, and talk to the environment and have it respond. I want it to understand what I'm asking for. I want to be able to say, and you could do that with your Moto G. You could say, okay, Google Now, what's up? And it will say, hi, Patrick. You have 3 email messages. You have 4 text messages.
You've never really seen me interact with things like Siri and Google Now.
Does not go well?
The thing was, so a friend of mine loaned me his Google Glass, his glass. And I asked it something, and it actually responded with an answer it should have, instead of going, could you repeat that, or telling me the population of Uzbekistan,
or telling
me what floor wax was, when it actually works. But so few of these products have actually worked.
I think we're getting close. What I'm saying is, this is what I think people want. And there's going to be a lot of this paranoia, oh, it's a robot's target. But once there's utility and you can say, hey, what appointments do I have today? Would you read me my emails? If I can merely listen to and respond to my email in the morning while I'm shaving, that would be worth a lot to me.
See, I'm in the future already. I'm working on single tasking. You're trying to figure out how to have your Jibo is reading your email to you and you're responding while shaving.
I want Jibo to say, you have an email from Patrick. Okay, Jibo, read it to me. Patrick says, I'm going to be on Twit this afternoon. Would you like me to bring you a pizza? I say, Jibo, respond, yes, thank you, Patrick, and have that whole done automatically. Wouldn't that be awesome?
Yes, if it actually works that way.
And you'd get an email that says, vibbidip, zip. And you'd go, I don't know why Leo said that. I just feel like that, but that's what we're headed for. And that will be very, very useful. I've been thinking a lot about this because Larry Page said, you know, the problem we have is, here's a good example. I was talking about this on the radio show. If you go to your Google dashboard and you look at your location history, lately people act as if they've never seen this before, and it's been there forever, but it'll show you where you've been. Google.com/dashboard. Forever, because the iPhone does this as well. Android does it. It's always on, always tracking you. Here, I'll show you I don't mind showing you my location history. But people get very nervous about this, saying, oh, my God, Google's following you around. I can go to any day, see where I was. Today, this is how I traveled around. I can say, show me my last 5 days, and I can even play it back. You know, I can go through. And people get very nervous about this. But, of course, this is what the phone's doing. If I show you this, this scares you. But if, on the other hand, I say to you, you know, it's really cool. I've got this Google Now. When I get to the airport, it pulls up my pass, my boarding ticket, and puts it on the screen. Or when I go into the grocery store, it says, don't forget to get milk. You put that on your list. Cortana does this. Siri does this. Google does this. That's how they do it. They follow you, and they know where you are, and they use geofencing to say, well, you're at the store now. And if you start with, wouldn't it be cool if your phone knew you were at the store and told you needed milk or pulled up your boarding pass when you got to the airport? Everybody'd say, yeah, that's great. What we don't think is, well, in order to do that, it's going to have to track you all the time. What's the problem?
Well, first of all, I'm looking at my history and it's not accurate.
You got to turn your phone on or something.
Well, my phone was on, but it still missed a couple. Or it put me in one spot instead of in San Francisco instead of all of the spots in San Francisco. I mean, it's kind of it's interesting because it's like I'm looking at this. There's like 23 updates on the Richmond Bridge. And then,
well, you sound like a guy who goes to a restaurant and says the food's terrible here and the portions are so small.
Well, no, but I'm saying
you want it to be more accurate.
I'm saying if it's gonna take over my life, it actually has to work.
Actually, you're right. It keeps putting me in Sebastopol for some reason.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, you're right.
Do you understand
right
what I'm saying?
Look at there, I go. I don't know where I'm going. Holy cow!
But you're going fast. You know what I mean? Well, like I don't. You know, it's if it's going to automatically pop up. You know, my flight information, not the airline.
It does do that pretty well. Do you ever, have you, now that you have an Android phone, do you use Google Now?
Very rarely.
Oh, I love Google Now.
I will experiment with Google Now just to see if it works for me.
You should try it. Do you use it, Christina? You're probably an iPhone user.
No, I don't because I use TripIt. So TripIt has been doing what the Google Now thing does for me for my flight stuff for years. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm less creeped out by Google Now than I was like even like 2 months ago. I think there's some value there. My problem is like I'm looking at my location history. I don't know what Android account all my stuff is tied to because I'm not an Android account, Google account, because I've got like three different Google accounts. So what information it's tracking from me is different for each one. So it's not all consolidated. So that's
well, here's an example. Now, this is my Google Now. It knows what I'm doing. It says, oh, you're in This Week in Tech right now. This is how long it's going to take to get home. There's no traffic. Here's the weather report. Here's my giant score. Mm-hmm. Here's some news stories. Some products are being shipped to me. Here's where you parked. Now, I didn't ask it explicitly, but it just said, oh, I noticed you stopped moving so fast when you got there. So that must be where you parked. Here's some stories based on previous stories it thinks I would like to read. And it's absolutely right. These are good stories. And then it even says, is this card useful? Yeah, that was a good one. I like that. I think this is the only thing wrong with this is it hasn't done enough. I want more.
Yeah. Well, I guess part of it's like, you know, I travel a lot in places where maybe the population is low or because I'm going to a lot of places in Oakland or Richmond when I'm picking up supplies for the house. I'm finding out that when you get into, you know, poor communities, Google Maps doesn't work very well.
Yeah, well, that might be. Yeah.
Or if you're getting into places where the population is fairly low.
Okay, but I accept all this stuff is bad. It's not doing very well. But if it really worked well, would you be willing to trade the invasion of privacy for the value that you get from it?
Probably less than the average human being.
Okay. See, I don't know. A lot of people don't. But I want it. I want a robot too, though. And I don't care if it watches me, even while I shower. 12.9.
As long as it works.
Yeah. So, Christina, if all this stuff did what it's supposed to do, you would go for it.
I'd go for a lot of it. I wouldn't go for maybe all of it, but I would definitely go for a lot of it. Yeah. The key is that it needs to work. It's partially there now, and I think that's why it's disconcerting when you see the other information, because there's still that disconnect between what it's trying to do and what the ideal is. If it really would just work, then I think that the information it captures would kind of disappear in the background. But because there's still a layer you have to go over, a step you have to go over to make it work, it makes all that information that they're collecting visible. And that's what freaks people out.
I grant you that. Yes.
So I think that if it could just kind of work, then everything they're doing, it would still be creepy if you thought about it, but because it would disappear into the background and you would just focus on the utility.
That's kind of what Larry Page was saying, is if we make the mistake of showing them what we're collecting, what we should really show them is the value first, the utility. And then people won't worry about what
I mean, my problem is when I'm searching for a restaurant and I'm being given the location of a Google advertiser instead of the restaurant I'm looking for. You know what I mean? When it's a lot of stuff where it's like, or you know, the fact that they're, you know, Scoble's
that's
talking
a
about
failure.
It before.
It shouldn't do that.
But I would happily pay like $5 a month to just eliminate most if not all the advertising from Google Maps. Right,
but because all three of us have been in technology for a long time. We know that when it first starts, it doesn't work very well. Remember, Patrick, on the screensavers, the early MP3 players? Remember all the trouble it took to put an MP3 player in a car?
Yes. Yes, I do.
It was painful.
Yes, yes, it was.
But part of our job is to see beyond the immediate pain, know that this is going to mature, and when it does, it's going to be useful.
Like, on one hand, I hear what you're saying, but on the other hand, I feel like I'm going to buy, name a snack food, I'm going to buy a box of cookies at Raley's in exchange for my 10-cent discount. They're going to take that information, coordinate it against my number, send it to my insurance company. My insurance is going to go up. Like there's on one hand, like, yeah, sure. You know
when
what?
That happens,
how do
you
feel about the NSA
about
these days? You thumbs up, you thumbs down?
No, I'm down on the NSA.
So you're going to invite in a higher level of incursion or invasion of collection of information around you that should be not identifiable, but eventually will be identifiable.
Yeah, but Google doesn't have tanks.
They're just working on creating
drones. We'll talk about that in a second.
Well, but they're also working on creating a global internet in areas where there is not much internet by creating, you know, giant lighter than air dirigibles floating around with antennas. It's just a thin line from, you know, giant, you know, lighter than air dirigible.
You think they're going to weaponize those dirigibles?
No. Skynet's got to come from somewhere, Leo.
You're so paranoid. Don't be so paranoid. Technology's good.
I'm not really concerned about Google weaponizing. I'm more concerned about Google taking all the information they have and selling it to someone who would weaponize it.
Or just giving it to them because they got a subpoena.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, so get off the internet.
Right. I mean, that's kind of where we come.
What are you
going
to do?
Tor.
Right.
Tor is made by the CIA. You think Tor will protect you?
That's misinformation.
No, it's not.
False flag.
They funded it. All right, our show today brought to you by Squarespace. This we can all get behind, a great place to make a website, because not only is it the best hosting, it's the best software, tightly integrated to give you a site that never goes down, that looks incredible, and uses all the latest web technologies. I know because, you know, we've looked at redesigning our TWiT website, and the reason we do that, in fact, Quartz just redid their website after like 6 months, the styles change, technology change. It's the last thing you want to get involved with. You want to have a website where you put your content, your photos, sell your candles, whatever it is you're doing, and you want to let them think about all the tough stuff so that your site is mobile responsive. And every Squarespace template is. It'll look great on any size screen so that you have e-commerce, secure, safe, simple e-commerce built in. Every Squarespace template has e-commerce. And of course, easy for you to modify even if you don't know CSS or HTML5 or JavaScript. Although, if you are a developer, Squarespace has a great platform for developers, including a really beautiful code editor with syntax coloring and all that stuff. E-commerce is on every plan level, by the way. So even if you're on the $8 a month plan, the basic plan, you can take a donation or have a cash wedding registry or have a school fund drive. It couldn't be easier, and the best part is you could try it right now without a credit card, without paying a penny. Just go to squarespace.com, click the Get Started button, play with the templates, import your existing content, get a sense of what it could do for you. You should try the apps, too. They've got the great Metric app for the iPhone and the iPad that lets you check site stats like page views and social media follows, a blog app that makes it not only easy to post but also to moderate comments. It's just gorgeous. Squarespace.com. When you register for a year, you'll get a free domain name as well. .com, .net, .gov. I don't think they do .gov, but they have most of the top-level domain names. And it's really nice. I want you to try it. 2 weeks free. No credit card required. Squarespace.com. Click the Get Started button. And if you decide to buy, do use the offer code TWIT. You'll get 10% off at purchase. Squarespace.com. Not too thrilled about the new cybersecurity czar who says, I don't know anything about security, but that's good. He's a policy wonk. And he got appointed by President Obama. His name is Michael Daniel. Comes from the policy side. He says, it doesn't matter that I don't know anything about code or security. He says being too down in the weeds at the technical level could actually be a little bit of a distraction. What? What? He's never been involved with cybersecurity. He has a strong background in policy and budgeting, a degree in government. This is just depressing. Strong article, I thought, in Forbes by Robert M. Lee. He's an active duty Air Force cyber warfare operations officer, co-founder of Drago Security. He says, you know what? It kind of does matter. You ought to know a little bit about this if you're going to run the whole thing. Just thought I'd bring it up. Another good article I enjoyed, and this was in a source I'm not completely familiar with, but I, as far as I can tell, is accurate. It's the Center for Public Integrity. You ever hear about them? Very interesting article by Alan Holmes, how big telecom smothers mm-hmm. city-run broadband. And we've kind of known the outlines of this. He talks about a Republican state senator from rural Tennessee, Janice Bowling, in her constituency, the city of Tullahoma, doesn't really have high-speed internet.
Right.
So the city put in high-speed internet right on. Very happy. They decided they wanted to expand it to just outside the city limits to encourage new buildings, mm-hmm. new businesses. Immediately, AT&T, by the way, the network, which offers speeds 80 times faster than AT&T and 10 times faster than Charter, it works like a utility, like electricity. Right. And she believes this is a right. Everybody in this town needs it. We don't quarrel with the fact that AT&T has shareholders that it has to answer to. That's fine. I believe in capitalism and the free market. But when they won't do it in our town, we got to do it. Well, AT&T, Charter, and Comcast got together with state senators, tried to convince them to kill the measure, finally threatened a lawsuit, and it failed. And this happens in every so many municipalities, right. time and time again. Currently, 20 states ban or restrict municipalities yeah. from offering internet at all.
Well, that
started in Philly.
Yeah, that was
Comcast
Verizon.
Backyard.
Comcast,
yeah,
yep.
in 2004. It's kind of yep. like I just pulled up one of the articles. I'm like, oh, I remember reading this 10
yeah.
years ago. But basically, Verizon got so upset that Philadelphia decided to deal with the fact there was no decent internet access in Philadelphia that they went to the state legislature and basically got a bill passed to sort of prevent that from happening.
And they did this, and they moved on, and 20 states yeah. now have that bill, that
yeah.
law.
Incumbent telephone companies such as Verizon have the ability to block Pennsylvania cities from building and charging for high-speed internet systems. That's a Washington
now,
Post article.
I understand, I'm a business owner, that you don't want the government competing with you. But if it's a place where the commercial enterprises yeah. won't do it, I think it's incumbent on the government to do it because it's what keeps jobs, it's what keeps business. 130 cities offer fiber or cable internet to their communities. Mm-hmm. Of those 130, 89 are gigabit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's illegal in 20 states. And there is also, in many cases, laws that preempt municipalities from expanding beyond their municipal boundaries.
Well, I don't remember the exact number, where it was $11 or $13 million, but like a couple of years ago, when the FCC was talking about net neutrality, oddly enough, wireless internet wasn't counted, and oddly enough,
nope.
AT&T and Verizon had dropped like somewhere between $11 and $13 yep. million dollars lobbying inside the Beltway, huh?
It's really, and of course, the solution to net neutrality, I've come to believe, I understand people's reluctance to get government involved. And I really kind of, I think they're probably right. The mm-hmm. last thing you want is the ham-handed members of Congress who are, being bought by telecoms running the internet. The best solution is competition. If you've got, a Comcast.
It's going to be really tough in at least 20 states.
It's going to be tough everywhere, unfortunately. These yeah. guys don't want competition. They want a monopoly. All right. Enough of that. That was in our indignation section. hope you all enjoyed it. Back to Google's secret drones. Actually, it turns out, you remember Amazon was talking about delivery drones? Turns out Google's been working on this for years, according to The Atlantic, in their X projects, the Google X. A drone delivery system. This is Project Wing. That would deliver stuff like very fast, flying robots that can deliver products across the city in a minute or two. Here comes the prop. Watch out. It's falling. Oh, my God. Quick, catch it, rancher. Catch it. Here it comes. Oh, it's on a wire. Nice soft landing. And there goes the wire. What the hell?
I mean, let's step back. First of all, look at the fact that they would have to significantly alter FAA regulations on airspace in every
illegal.
Densely populated
yeah, yeah.
part of the country. Because
but Google's lobbying Amazon's lobbying the FCC to do that, allow them to test.
I don't know. I'm just trying.
Imagine the sky filled with these things.
That's a really scary thought. In some cases, when you think about how poorly some not commercial pilots, private pilots already are in some of these areas. Yeah, I I kind of worry, you know, like having your drone shipment, you know, interfere with like somebody in like a single engine or twin engine plane.
I'm more actually thinking about this point of the drones, like, you know, it's given how densely populated cities are and how much RF there is bouncing around in the average city.
Right.
You know, or like, you know, it's kind of funny. It's like, I can't go to a store to pick this up and I can't wait until tomorrow for it to be delivered, but I'm going to go stand out in front of my office building and wait for the drone to lower me the package. You know what I mean? Like at some point, this just...
I love it. I want drones. I want robots. I want weaponized Zeppelins.
Actually,
I don't
you
care.
You can send your robot out to wait for the drone to pick up your carton of milk.
See, that actually does make sense. Have a robot that can be a drone carrier or whatever.
But
you know?
wait till the ranchers start shooting concierge. At drones trying to get whatever's in it. Shoot them down. This is not going to happen.
Well, right. No, exactly. It's like, that's when it's like, people are going to start like having like drone tracking apps so that you can try to like intercept the package before the person gets it. So you can like run off just, with like, whatever they've ordered.
That's cool. EMP blasting drones out of the sky to see if there's cookies inside.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's going to be awesome.
Ooh. You're like when the next big PlayStation or Xbox comes out, you're like, oop, drone alert. All right, got to get the new one. Whatever. So, oh my God, iPhone release day. That's like the perfect one, right?
Oh,
like, so the new iPhones are coming out, right? And like, the drones are delivering them.
Hundreds of drones in the sky all carrying the new iPhone.
Yes.
It's a bonanza.
Better make sure the kill switch is in place. Well, can you imagine? I mean, well, you're sitting there like, but like you're in New York City, you know, I'm way south of downtown in San Francisco. If I'm sitting there staring up at a drone, like how many people are just going to get wiped out or how many things are going to be stolen? Like,
well, no, that's what I'm saying. It's like how much. Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, it's already risky enough, like where we live, you know, to have something delivered. Like if you don't have a doorman in your building, you know, like it's already kind of risky. You're like, I didn't get this package.
Chat room says, how is it different than robbing a UPS delivery guy?
Because there's not a guy. It's just something dropping from the sky.
you're looking up.
Plus, it's more fun.
It is like more fun. Ski. I mean, totally. And presumably, you know, it'd be easier to track, you know? I mean, I'm sure you could hack into the UPS system and see, like, where their delivery time is. But in this case, you could probably be, like, exactly where it is, like, in the sky and, like, where it's supposed to land.
Well, that's why we're going to weaponize the drones, so they can shoot back.
The words of Skynet. Well, it's funny. Like, I can understand from a financial perspective, I can understand why they would want to do this. Because you look, I think there's... Now, San Francisco is ridiculous when it comes to parking tickets, right? They make like something ridiculous, like $100 million a year in revenue off parking tickets right now. But because there's no parking and because...
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's insane. You got to understand, San Francisco is only 49 square miles and most of the, you know,
wait,
most of the...
$100 million a year?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. But what they do is, you know, for UPS and FedEx and DHL and whoever else is operating, they basically, the driver takes the ticket and they basically throw the ticket at somebody at the office or however they handle it. But essentially, they settle. Like FedEx a few years ago, like they settled, you know, $19 million or $10 million worth of tickets for like a flat $7 million payment at the end of the year.
Okay, it's worse than you said. $100 million in tickets, $41 million in parking revenue. Yeah. And that was 2011.
Yeah, well, the parking revenue means when you actually physically pay for the parking.
Like
the
a meter or whatever.
Well,
yeah.
And the lots and stuff, because there's some
holy
municipal
camoli.
Lots.
That's not an insignificant amount of money.
Yes. Yeah, I would love to know what percentage of the $100 million now, because now it's like, they're like, I think a $60 ticket is now $75 or $80, and then immediately bumps up, or very quickly bumps up to $165.
Actually, that was in 2011. In 2012, $187 million a year.
So there's certainly a motivation to stop moving trucks around in the city, but it's also, it's like, how many drone deliveries can you do in a day without a major advancement in battery technology? Well, I mean,
we need a very sophisticated air traffic control system.
Well, you also need a major advance in battery technology.
Right.
Yes. Like, which I've been saying for years, we got to go nuclear. The batteries.
Little tiny nuclear, that's the solution. Every drone has a small amount of plutonium in it and a little tiny nuclear reactor.
Exactly.
What could possibly go wrong?
So many places I can go with that.
Ecuador, you know about Bitcoin, you know about Dogecoin, you know about Litecoin. Well, Ecuador is the first government that is planning to do a virtual cryptocurrency later this year.
Interesting.
Ecuador's current cash is U.S. dollars, And I guess they don't want to have dollars anymore.
I was going to say, because they don't really have a currency.
The Czech Republic launched, well, this wasn't the government. This was enthusiasts in the Czech Republic who launched the Czech crown coin. And, well, we'll see. We'll see what happens.
I will say
like that, Shipcoin or something in Canada, doesn't Canada, or is it Mintcoin? I know it's not really crypto, but it has some similar elements. Is that what it's called? Mint chip. That's what
Mint
it is.
Mint chip sounds like my favorite ice cream flavor.
I got to say that the history of the currency used in Ecuador is a great Wikipedia article because you go.
Oh, yeah. They decided to tie it to make it the dollar because they.
Yeah, well, 1830, 1845 is the peso, first the state of Ecuador, then the Republic of Ecuador, and then it goes to the peso fuerte, the franco, the peso, the sucre on the silver standard, the sucre on the gold standard, the sucre on unconvertible paper, the sucre on the gold exchange standard, the 1932 2000 sucre, and the 2000 dollarization. It's funny because we're really spoiled in the United States because our currency is relatively stable.
Right. That's why they use the dollar.
A friend of mine's family had kind of hopped on their way to the United States, had hopped through two or three Central American countries, and they don't really believe in money the way I do because money disappeared on them.
Sure, they
need
wheelbarrows to buy a loaf of bread. Hey, what do you take Ubers?
No.
Lyfts?
No.
I bet you, I know, you, Christina, you're an Uber girl. I could tell.
I'm totally an Uber girl.
I know it. Do you do Uber X or the regular Uber?
Mostly Uber X, but in New York it's different because all the drivers are licensed because that's the only way you can get in. So if you're black car, then it's like a late model, either like a SUV or like a town car. And then the Uber X's, you know, are like regular cars.
So where do you come down on this? And I'm not sure what this – so Lyft says that Uber mm-hmm. – has been getting, calling Ubers via phone and then canceling 5,500 cancellations in a year.
Right. And so, but it's like worse than that, right? Like really, it's this whole recruitment strategy. So the cancellations are only because they've already tried to recruit those drivers. That's why those rides are being canceled. It's not to like annoy them and make it so they can't pick up other people. What it is that they book rides with the implicit purpose of then trying to recruit the driver to join Uber. And so they bring, you know, like full like starter packs with them. They want to, you know, get them signed up. I mean, that's the whole reason they're doing the call. And then they have like a whole Google Doc or something that says, this is the person I've already talked to. No one else talked to them. And if you call a Lyft and you get someone who's already on the list, you immediately cancel so you can try to recruit again.
So the cancellations are a side effect of this recruitment strategy, really.
Precisely. And really, I think that it's probably a lot more minor. The number is huge, but really, if you cancel within like the first like 15 seconds, then it's not really going to hurt anything. Right. Like you're not messing anybody else up in that period of time. If they're canceling immediately, it's not like they're waiting a couple minutes and then canceling to try to, you know, ruin somebody's day. They're doing this as part of a hardcore recruitment strategy.
So by the way, Casey Newton got a great scoop on
The
Verge.
Amazing scoop on that. Yeah. Casey did fantastic work on The Verge with that.
A lot of credit. Yeah. A lot of credit goes to Casey. Who even got the documents? They called the
he got it all.
The street team is called Slog. They have their own hashtag, Shave the Stash, which is a takeoff on the pink mustache that Lyft cars have on. I like the pink mustache, but I'm nervous about Lyft because you don't know what you're going to get, right? You don't know what kind of car is going to show up.
Yeah, and I haven't used them in New York because their launch here was not good. And frankly, it really turned me off on them in a lot of ways. Uber is pretty cocky, but I have to say Uber was not dumb enough to come to New York City and think that they couldn't actually be part of the TLC, that they couldn't actually be licensed, whereas Lyft thought that they could actually somehow change the entire infrastructure. It's like, no, that's not how this works. Not in New York, not in one of the biggest, cab markets out there. And that's, I think, why Uber has managed to do okay in New York and hasn't had a lot of the ire from some of the cabbies. Some of the medallion holders might hate them, but a lot of the cabbies don't because they are at least all registered with the TLC.
Right.
So,
taxi and limo commission.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, every driver who drives you is licensed. But my experiences in San Francisco with Lyft haven't been that positive. I've got to be honest. So I would much rather take Uber, even UberX in San Francisco, just because my experiences with Lyft have just really not been good.
So, this is interesting because a lot of people read this article and said, well, that's it. I'll never take Uber again. They're they're being so anti-competitive. And as Casey points out, it is a zero-sum game. A ride that Lyft gets is one that Uber won't get, and vice versa.
Right. Well, actually, what I think it is it's not so much about, it's really about what this proves, and this has been written by other people before too, is that the real currency in this market, and this is true whether you're talking about traditional cabs, whether you're talking about traditional liveries, or you're talking about, you know, kind of this mix between the two with Uber and Lyft, is that the real currency is with the driver, not with the rides, because that's who's really going after.
For now, because that was one of the big things that leaked out of Uber, where they're like, well, we're going to move to Google Cars as fast as we can. And Uber's valuation is kind of insane, right? They're valued at over $18 billion.
And partially, it's insane.
Well, I was going to say, they're pitching themselves as the drone alternative of the future, where their automated cars will deliver, you know, they'll have a fleet of cars, and they'll pick people up, and they'll deliver packages, and they'll move stuff around, and become this insane logistics system. I always laugh.
More than just a cab service.
Yeah.
Oh, no, their logistics are, I mean, I think that's what makes them so genius. There's another company in New York called MakeSpace, which it does, which makes it really easy to do storage. Right. And they're also similar in that way, in that their real genius is their logistics end. And so I think that Uber has a lot of opportunities it could go in. But I think for now, you're right. The real commodity, not the real commodity, but the real currency is with drivers, at least until we go into these drone things, because there is a more limited supply of drivers. No, genuinely. So in San Francisco, and I know in Atlanta, most people, drivers that I talk to, drive for both Lyft and Uber. And they just... we'll have them both on, and whatever they get, you know. And if Lyft comes on, they'll put on the stupid mustache. And if it's, you know, Uber, they'll put the Uber thing in there, but they'll use both.
I will say not using a pink mustache was a genius stroke on Uber's part, because,
I think the pink mustache is brilliant.
No, my problem is, see, I drive in an area of San Francisco that has a lot of, because there's a whole bunch of startups and new buildings, and we're south of the ballpark. So I know every time I get cut off by somebody who's driving for Lyft, or somebody who's running a red light,
a pink mustache.
And I will say, one of the things about New York is they said, hey, you have to play by adult rules in New York City. You know, that may be an entrenched bureaucracy that is stifling competition, but they're also, nobody's walking into New York going, oh, you told the insurance company you drive 100 miles a year for recreational purposes, when in reality you're driving like 200 miles a day, ferrying people around commercially. And you know, oh, we'll cover the difference. Oh, yeah, that's a great business model. You'll cover the,
you got to give credit to Uber. Uber's been around longer and have fought. Fought against governments all over the world.
Well, they have.
So they've become savvy. Right. I mean, that's just experience.
Well, it is and it's not, because they've been in New York a lot longer than Lyft has. But when they came to New York, they didn't make these mistakes. They researched their market and they started the black car thing first. And when they did UberX, they did it the right way, which to me says one. I mean, regardless of what you think about the competition practices, one company, I think, is the adult in this situation, you know, to kind of go back to that analogy, and actually thinks about what they can get away with and what markets they're in, whereas the other thinks they can just show up and, you know, that oh, everybody loves us. Give me a fist bump, bro. Like, no, like, I'm not going to do that. You know, like, oh, you just sit in the front seat. Like, no, I'm not going to do that either.
This is so interesting, because I really thought when I read Casey's article, oh, that's it for Uber. People are going to be pissed off that they're so anti-competitive.
Some people will be, but the difference is, I think, is that most people, it comes down to price and it comes down to experience. If you have a good experience, and I think like in San Francisco, where the traditional cabs are so awful, they're just so terrible, you know, the Uber and Lyft really fit a void there. Atlanta's the same way. Atlanta official taxi system is one of the worst I've ever been in my life.
But New York has Uber, a pretty Lyft, good cab system.
New York also has the best public transportation system in the United States, and it runs 24 hours.
Right.
They do, but if you live in certain areas where you've got to carry packages, or maybe it's raining, and you know, now it started under Mayor Bloomberg, now it's under Mayor de Blasio, where they have the outer boroughs where you can't do pickups for you know, they have these green cabs, which are basically kind of like yellow cabs, but it's kind of, they run more like Ubers do, but they've got credit card machines in the back. They will do pickups and drop-offs, and they'll drop you off anywhere, but they can only do pickups in Queens or the Bronx or Brooklyn. But the problem is that, like, where I live in Brooklyn, it's very rare to be able to find a cab. Like, you might get lucky, but if I need a car, I've got to call a car service. The car service in most cases is going to be pretty bad. They might be cheaper than Uber or Lyft, but it's going to be pretty bad. I mean, I had, and then what happens then is, because they're really antiquated, I've had gypsy cabs come up a number of times where they say they're from the car service I ordered from. And then, you know, the cop pulled us over crossing the Brooklyn Bridge and was like, can I see your ID? And the guy's
that's
like,
not a good experience.
The guy like lied to him and then he was like, gave him a ticket. The cop was cool. He was like, it's raining. You can go ahead and take this ride to your destination. I'm not going to make you get out in the rain. I was like, thanks, dude.
Well, it was also, but like,
okay, yeah, but Lyft says that on average, customers cancel 16% of rides. Uber said in the past, this is Nick Bilton writing in the New York Times, that 10% of rides roughly are canceled. Lyft found that accounts associated with people who identified themselves as Uber recruiters canceled 85% of the rides they call.
Yeah.
50 rides a day, that's a significant disruption.
Oh, it is. It's a disruption, I think, but it depends on how quickly are you canceling. Like if you're canceling, like I said, within like the first 15 or 30 seconds, then it might piss off a driver and it certainly is an annoyance, but I don't think it's going to lessen the supply that's available to other people.
If an Uber recruiter takes a Lyft cab to recruit him, isn't that one less car that could pick you up? I mean,
It is. But I mean, you've also got to think like, you know, it is what it is. I mean, it's a shady practice, but I'm not saying that it's great. It's certainly a shady practice, but I'm not at the same time. Maybe I'm just really jaded by knowing how completely unethical and like how the mob basically still runs the entire medallion system that I'm thinking in the grand scheme of things, when it comes to transportation, this actually is like so benign. It's bothersome, but it wouldn't stop me from using the service that for me is better. Like, I'm not going to not use Uber because, you know, their CEO says some questionable things and they have some shady competition practices. It's like, if that starts to impact their service, then that's one thing. But, you know, I think that the drivers I talk to seem to really like it, and which is interesting. Lyft drivers I haven't talked to as much and been able to get as much feedback. But Uber drivers, people like it a lot. What I've also noticed, now this would be interesting to see, is I've noticed that regular cab drivers have told me that they get recruited a ton from Uber people. Yeah. So that is an interesting thing.
Do you make
thing,
more
right?
money driving for Lyft or Uber than you do for a cab?
You can.
So is it a good job, do you think?
I think it depends on who it is. I mean, they try to sell it for people to do it as a part-time thing, but that's you're not going to make any money that way.
I'm just
people
thinking I might need a job. Thing.
For people who are doing it full-time, yeah, I mean, they can usually probably do better or at least as well as they would with a cab, but maybe not have to deal with as much of the bureaucracy that goes on with the medallion system. Right. People like it because they can choose their own hours more and they can kind of pick and choose, like, you know, you can get a fare and say, okay, I feel like going here. I don't feel like going there. You know, you don't have to stay in maybe the same area. So you can maybe go to areas that you wouldn't otherwise think that you would be able to get fares. Right. You know that you can. So I don't know. I mean, I think that a lot of cab drivers that I've talked to, or a lot of drivers I've talked to have actually said, yeah, I'm looking into doing Uber, or people who are doing Uber, you know, will do it along with doing private car service stuff, which is pretty lucrative for them. So they might have, you know, personal clients, but then also do Uber if they need to fill in gaps between their schedules. So I don't know.
All right. We're going to take one more break, wrap this up pretty soon. But I do have a couple of things to talk about, including the kill switch, good or bad. Some say actually it's just a way the government can shut down protest. I don't know. We'll also talk about the Keurig K-Cup. The DRM has been cracked.
Dun, dun, dun.
Next on Techzilla. And a few more things, but first a word about your entertainment. You know, I'm flying to London. That's a long flight. End of the month. Going to be taking a week for vacation. People have been saying, what do you do on a long flight? I listen to audiobooks. It's the best thing in the world. In fact, I look forward. I miss my long commute. Used to do that all the time to Tech TV, and I started listening to audiobooks in the year 2000. Became an Audible customer that year. 500 books later, I'm still loving Audible. What are you looking at?
I just remember like you.
It was a nightmare. 2-hour commute sometimes.
Oh, you're the reason I don't live in Sonoma County, because I would have to spend 4 hours a day.
You need a job here.
I knew exactly how much time I would be spending in the car.
The solution is get a job in Sonoma County.
Yeah, you had to start a company to do that.
Well, I offered. You remember I offered. I said, you and me and Kevin, we could do this together. But no, you had to have a real job with things like salaries and benefits. I don't understand.
I'm so selfish. Being part of a family and contributing.
Oh, shut up. You fathers really annoy me. No, I'm just kidding around. The thing about Audible that's great is it's 150,000 books. It is really truly a wonderful bookstore. And the readers are phenomenal. You know, and the variety, I just saw this. E.E. Cummings, A Life by Susan Cheever. Wouldn't that be a great book if you love poetry? If you've got kids, The Wind in the Willows, narrated by Shelley Frazier, or Little Women. Oh, I've been listening to the autobiography of Graham Nash, read by Graham Nash. I'm loving it. I see Neil Young's got his biography. Who better to read Neil Young's biography than Keith Carradine? That would be awesome. He probably looks and sounds just like Neil Young. This is one they keep offering me based on my Amazon purchases: The Art of Fermentation, an in-depth exploration and of essential concepts and processes from around the world. Believe it or not, I am a professional fermenter. I have many things fermenting on the counter of my kitchen, including vinegar and sourdough.
I've read an entire book on salt and an entire book
on
codfish. It is a great book.
Is that Mark Kuryansky? That's a great book.
So I'm actually going to put The Art of Fermentation into my queue.
A must read. I love Audible, and I think you will love it. That's why we've arranged a special deal for you. If you go to audible.com/twit2, you can get two free books. Look at all the books I've listened to. Just new one, Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. I'm very excited. Have you read this yet, Christina, Whiskey Tango? People are raving over this. New York Times said it was the summer read. The committee, an international cabal of industrialists and media barons, is on the verge of privatizing all information. Dear Diary, an idealistic online underground, stands in the way of that takeover using radical politics, classic spycraft, and technology that makes big data look like dial-up. Doesn't that sound fun? Like fun?
No, it does sound fun.
Sounds like an awesome book.
Making big data look like dial-up is this weird
People
mashup.
Are raving about this. It's called Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. I just bought it, and it's in my library. One of the next things I'm going to listen to. There's so many great books at audible.com. We just had Andy Weir, who wrote The Martian, on the triangulation. That's a wonderful sci-fi story. I want you to visit audible.com. Actually, go to audible.com/twit2. And what we're going to do is we're going to give you a month free of the Platinum account. Two books free. And you can cancel any time in the first 30 days. Pay nothing, and those books will be yours to keep. You'll also get the Daily Digest of the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times. I'm telling you, in the car, in the gym, walking the dog, washing the dishes, even when I go to bed, I listen. I love Audible. Audible, ooh, look, economics, the user's guide. You can learn a lot by listening to audiobooks from Audible. And also entertainment, sci-fi. I just love it. Audible.com/twit2. Sign up today. I think you're going to be very happy. And if you've got a long flight coming up, you're going to want it. Factory Man, good book. Love that, Orko. So it's kind of fun. We get together, Audible listeners, many of them in the chat room, and talk about all the great books you can listen to next.
Or books.
So California law requires it. Jerry Brown, the governor, signed it into law. The kill switch. If California makes every phone manufacturer to offer a kill switch, I guess it'll be in every phone. Because if you don't want to have two separate SKUs, one for California, one not.
Why not? They do it with automobiles.
Maybe. That's true. They do it with emissions because our emissions control standards are so high, huh?
Yes.
But I don't think they do that with phones. It's so easy to put them in. Apple already has a kill switch on all the iPhones, right? And the Android Device Manager is a free download. It comes on many Android phones, but you can also get it for free from Google, and that does the same thing. And I don't know about Windows Phone if they have a kill switch, but I think that would be an easy thing to implement.
So this is – what was interesting is this actually didn't pass – earlier this year in the California Senate, and then George Gascon, who's the DA for San Francisco, and New York's Attorney General got together, and the reason they're doing this is because smartphone theft is the crime of choice in New York City and San Francisco, and I presume a lot of other large urban metropolises, because there's a huge market. They're basically, it's really easy to crack a phone, wipe a phone, and they're really easy to turn over.
Does the kill switch mean you can't resell it? Like, it just, it's
the
no
kill
longer
switch
usable.
Means it's dead.
It's dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So does iPhone have that? I think you do have to sign into your lock.
You've got to go through Find My Phone.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's actually Information Week did a really good article. So will a kill switch kill a smartphone that has been reported stolen? No, it's a reversible process. But the owner...
you have to prove that it's yours to do that.
Yeah. Well, The law states, quote, the technological solution shall be reversible so that if an authorized user obtains possession of the smartphone after the essential features of the smartphone has been rendered inoperable, the operation of those essential features can be restored by an authorized user.
Is there some sort of history of this that shows that it does, in fact, reduce smartphones theft or no?
Well, the issue is that there are so many crimes involved. Here it is. 30 to 40% of robberies in major U.S. cities involve the theft of mobile communications
devices.
Yeah,
my daughter
devices.
Lost her iPhone in Mexico in Guanajuato right. at knife point, and all they wanted was her iPhone.
Yeah, I mean, San Francisco, 65% of the robberies are over basically a cell phone or a tablet.
Wow.
So, you know, they at least want to try and... You know, the idea of being able to either, you know, shut down the radio, the interface, or something else like that should not be that technologically difficult to implement
now,
in any of
the
these
truly
devices.
Paranoid, and I think we can dismiss this off on the face of it, but the truly paranoid, and I've seen articles to this effect, say that it's not such a good idea because the government could also use it to silence protests. After all, in the Arab Spring and... In Tahrir Square in Istanbul, smartphones were used to organize.
Yeah, but as the resident paranoid, if they wanted to shut down, they would.
It's easy enough to just call the phone companies.
They just call the phone companies and shut down the towers.
All right, you're right.
You know what I mean? Like so this is me talking. You're Mr. Paranoid, right? Okay. But it's like if they want to shut down communication,
they can still do it.
Exactly, they can do it in a way that would be much more effective than. Yeah. Right, than having to manually go through each phone. Yeah, no, I mean, I think as a theft deterrent, it can be really strong. I guess, you know, the question is going to be, you know, when this goes into effect, how much time manufacturers have to do this, and then how long before there are enough phones with this feature seeded into the ecosystem for it to have any impact, you know, on the theft rate, if it does at all, you know, in California.
Right.
And then I guess there will be the cat and mouse game between people who are trying to figure out how to, you know, reverse the kill switch.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's in an Information Week article, which is California smartphone kill switch law. What does it mean? So where did it go? So they put the activation lock in iOS 7. Quote, the technology has already had a positive effect on iPhone theft. In the first 5 months of 2014, shortly after Apple introduced activation lock, the theft of Apple devices fell by 17% in New York City, while thefts of Samsung products increased by 51% compared to the same period in the previous year.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's proof positive.
I mean, because my understanding from having talked to some people on the sort of law enforcement side of things is smartphones are kind of an ATM for anybody that's willing to steal one.
Right.
Because there's just a lot of people that want these phones, you know, and are willing to pay considerably less for them and not be particularly worried about the provenance of the phone. So. Right.
And one of the things Keurig did to keep you from using other people's pods.
yeah, I remember this.
In their coffee maker. Printer manufacturers do this too. They totally. They have smart chips in the cartridges and in the printer that keep you from using third-party cartridges or injecting new ink into your cartridge. Well, the Keurig's done the same thing as well. Well, the DRM has been broken not by hackers but by competitors, Treehouse and Real Cup.
Mm-hmm. And that's how it was broken on printers too, wasn't it? It was like the third party guys that figured out ways to get around that.
Well, they are incented to, right? If they want, if Real Cup wants to sell K cups, they need to break it. So the question is: does this violate the DMCA? They've reverse engineered DRM.
As long as they reverse engineer it themselves and don't share it with anybody, in theory, it's not a DMCA violation. Well, no, wait, it is a DMCA violation because it's a mess.
That's a good point, though. They're not telling anybody how to do it. They're just making their
unless
own
they did a deal with the second company to give them the technology.
No, you know what? I don't know if it would be a DMCA violation, but it would still be a violation of basic,
it's circumvention.
I guess, like stuff. Right, exactly. Because I'm thinking back to Nintendo versus Atari, the case that like went on for forever in the 80s was around that very issue that Nintendo didn't want anybody else making cartridges that would work in the Nintendo for the NES unless the authorized seal.
And Nintendo won, didn't they?
Yes, they did. They won, and they subsequently won all the appeals process too. So it was Atari under Tengen, and then there were others. You know, like there was a Bible game. I remember people would like
important point.
Yeah.
A cartridge is a copyrighted thing. I don't think a coffee pod is copyrightable.
Anything is.
Why wouldn't it be? Why would the cartridge be any different?
Aren't coffee pods copyrighted works? No, they're just a thing with coffee in it.
No, but wouldn't the mechanism be the thing, though? I mean, because that's really what was being. It wasn't
well,
the content.
The DMCA says you can't circumvent to access controls to copyrighted works. It's right, the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. So if you can't copyright a coffee pod, then it's not circumvention because it's not a copyrighted work.
But I mean, in this case,
I can't wait to see the court case.
Right, but I'm saying in this case, when
Your
it's
Honor,
like
that, obviously, Atari, this coffee pod is the creation of a true artist, and by virtue of that art, it is a copyrighted work.
But in this case, I mean, with Nintendo, it was more that the connector was what was copyright, not the content.
Well, but I agree. They circumvented the copy protection, but it has to be with an end to getting to the copyrighted materials. No, that you're right. That was different because it was a Bible
right.
game.
Right, exactly. I mean, these were, you know, the Atari made the stuff, and but Nintendo wouldn't approve it. They didn't want to pay Nintendo's rates to get Nintendo's approval. They just wanted the game to be able to play on the NES. So they reverse engineered the design so that you could put the cartridge in. So it's a similar thing what this is. So I'm guessing that they could probably just do a circumvention thing and the DMCA wouldn't have to be involved at all. That would be funny.
This is from Boing Boing. Cory Doctorow writes, but Keurig, whose business model it is to sell you coffee makers below cost and make a profit by using the law to force you to drink overpriced crappy coffee out of it, may not be able to resist the temptation to sue. And as far as test cases go, this is about as perfect as it is likely to get.
Well, part of what's so stupid about this is that they're basically locking. So you buy a Keurig coffee maker and you go to buy your Tim Hortons coffee or whatever weird K-cup thing you want to do. And if it doesn't work, I don't know. It's
I think it's the same thing as the printer cartridges. It's very frustrating if you want to buy third-party ink. It keeps the price artificially inflated of the K-cup or of the ink, right?
I don't know.
Hey, if you missed Twit, do you have the do we have a promo this week? If you missed Twit this week, we had some good stuff. I just want to show you that, then I'm going to let you guys go. This is what you missed this week on Twit.
Previously on Twit.
It's Twit Wow. You'll be saying wow every time you watch.
Triangulation.
Today we've got the visual effects supervisor at Sharknado. Would you prefer not to be known that? I could leave
I'll
that out.
You, it gets me a lot of free drinks.
Security Now.
We have the first confirmed major breach caused by Heartbleed.
Tech News Tonight.
Amazon has beaten Google to the punch and will buy Twitch.
Google was not going to give Twitch as much leeway.
This Week in Google.
Let's just watch a little Twitch TV. More people are watching this right now than are watching us.
This is like old people try to understand this newfangled gaming streaming thing.
Marketing Mavericks.
This is my favorite campaign ever. If this was here, I would be at Pizza Hut right now.
I also don't like associating animals and food.
Now in color.
Living color, Jim. Jim Cutler, our great announcer. Thank you, Jim. He ad-libs many of those.
He does it quite well.
He did the screensavers announce. Great guy. We didn't mention Twitch. You guys have any thoughts about that? Why does Amazon, of all things, want Twitch? Google made sense. YouTube made sense. I mean, a lot of the content on YouTube, the most successful content on YouTube, in fact, is the same kind of stuff. Game video. In-game play.
I don't know. They need something. It seems a bizarre purchase. Because
And it's, by the way, not insignificant. Amazon is not as cash-rich as some of these other companies.
Right.
It was something like 5% of their total cash holdings. $970 million. No thoughts, Christina? You're a gamer.
I am, yeah. No, I mean, I think it makes sense in the sense that they are looking at, you know, so there are a bunch of companies that are really betting on the future of video. And so you have people like Netflix and you have, you know, more traditional content companies, you know, like HBO Goes and you know, different models with that. You have Hulu, you have Amazon, obviously you have YouTube, and then you have Twitch. And so Amazon has been making a really big push into original video, and they haven't been that successful with their original productions, but they've been trying to build more and more value into their Prime Video ecosystem. So I think having this as a cornerstone of that, they're hoping will turn Prime into an Amazon, by extension, into a destination for all of this content. So they're saying, you know, there's already this huge audience here. We can help integrate that audience into our existing stuff and then kind of do what Google did with YouTube, where, you know, maybe it's slow to make money for a period of time. Although in this case, I actually think there are a lot of synergies for Amazon to make money off of Twitch in a way that maybe there wouldn't even be with Google. And then there's, you know, a way for them to build up their brand of their original video. So I think it makes sense on that level, even though isn't as, you know, perfectly synergistic as a YouTube acquisition. But I also feel like that's probably why Twitch sold to Amazon, is because they don't just want to become a division, you know, underneath right. somebody at YouTube. They want to be able to continue to build their own brand. And Amazon will certainly not be doing right. anything to dilute the existing Twitch brand. If anything, they're probably going to promote more right. and more Twitch stuff across their other products and on their homepage to try to, you know, build awareness yeah. And to that stuff.
I'd also add that gaming has never really been a particularly strong point for Amazon, maybe selling games right. through the Amazon store.
Well, that's what the other guy says in our chat room. That would be one way to monetize right. it. You're watching well, League of Legends, would you like to buy it?
Yeah, I mean, monetizing Twitch isn't a problem. The whole reason
right.
the whole reason Google was looking, or YouTube, Google, however you want to call it, was looking at Twitch is because it was a competitor to YouTube's advertising
exactly.
environment.
Right.
Yeah, and it's a very passionate. Somebody who's willing to watch, going to watch gameplay for 3 hours is a pretty hardcore consumer of content. It's a pretty huge network. There's a lot of eyeballs out there watching, you know, watching the videos. So yeah, as for a company that's kind of like they've started to move in the content direction, you know, like Netflix, they're looking at opportunities for gaming on the Fire TV and on the other portable devices.
Oh, Fire TV.
Yeah.
So this becomes.
I didn't even think of that.
There's actually a really great Twitch app. It came out, I guess, in June for Fire TV, and it's quite good. But what I can't wait for, you know, is that maybe the next Fire TV, or maybe they can release an update, but, right. you know, to be able to automatically stream your Fire TV gameplay to Twitch.
Right. And it's like which
you can do now on Xbox and PlayStation, right?
Right. And yeah. you can buy like a capture. There a number of companies make little capture things so that you right. can connect it to a Fire TV or something else and stream it. But I think that having it built into the box could be cool. And the reason I say that is that, you know, the games that are on Fire TV, they have a couple of originals, but most of them right. are Android games. And that is a market, I think, that is really ripe for, you know, Let's Play and for kind of, you know, shared gaming stuff that a lot of people haven't done because it's complicated right. to, you know, connect your Android or your iPhone and, right. and stream live. So I think that if Amazon could get in early with that and have it built into their box, that could be a potential, you know, draw for people too, especially then, you know, and at that point, it's not that far away to go from, you know, watching people play to then being able to maybe take place in exhibition matches, you know, with multi, right. you know, player gaming and that sort of thing across the network. I don't know.
I know one thing. We've gone on and on and on, and I think it's time for us to stop. So say again. Oh, the week ahead. Well, we'll say, you know what? I'll tell you what. We'll show you what's coming up in the week ahead, because I think we talked a little bit about what's coming up in the week ahead. With our news director, Mike Elgin. But first, let me say goodbye to Christina Warren, who's been very patient. We started late and we ended late. I hope you're not missing dinner, Christina.
If I am, it's okay. I've got tomorrow off, so I'll make do.
It's Labor Day. What are you doing for Labor Day?
It is Labor Day. I'm watching the last day of the Simpsons marathon.
Yes! I've been enjoying that. I've TiVo'd.
I was...
Because some of this stuff you can't even buy, right? So I was TiVo'ing like Marge versus Monorail. But or Modge in the Modern. But I looked and I said I TiVo'd 70 episodes out of it. So that's a little more than perhaps I should have done. But
you should have TiVo'd them all.
What was your favorite episode? How much did you stay up all night? Did you?
Oh yeah, no, I've watched way too much, and I have all the available seasons on DVD. But it's
not
just
all of them are available, though. Am I wrong?
No, they're not. No, it's up through season 16, and then there's also season 20 that's available on DVD. Season 17 is out in December, but we're at season 25 now, about to go into season 26. So that's still like that's like 8 years.
I made sure to TiVo season 4 and 5, which I think many connoisseurs, the Conan years.
This is the Conan years. I'm more seasons 6, 7, and 8. I'm really a big fan of the Mike Scully, not Mike Scully, the Joshua Weinstein and Bob Bill Oakley seasons.
How people
They're my
have
two favorites.
Like their favorite. Mm-hmm. And then, did you get upset about the aspect ratio issue?
A little bit, but you know why I'm okay with it. This is why I'm okay with it. They are going to be having the weird messed up aspect ratio on FXX, but on the FX Now Simpsons World app, they will be presented in the correct aspect ratio, which is awesome. So that means like that's an even better promo for the app, in my opinion, is that the app will have them all on the correct aspect ratio.
So there's an app?
There's going to be an app coming out in October called Simpsons World that is like HBO Go, but it's every episode of The Simpsons ever, as well as clips put into an entire thing with trivia. It's, yeah. It's,
how much is that going to cost? $1 million?
No, it's going to be free as long as you're a cable subscriber. It's going to be completely free.
With in-app purchases? Like Do I have to buy donuts like I did on The Simpsons Tapped Out?
I don't think they're going to do that, but that would actually be really, they could do a lot of really fun things with that. So yeah, they're creating an entire app just around The Simpsons. It'll be out in October.
Can I have your access code for the app so I can watch The Simpsons? Because I'm not getting cable to watch The Simpsons.
I was going to say, Patrick, should I like make you one for my you could totally be our child. You could totally be my husband and my child.
Yes. Patrick looks like a small baby. It's got all swole up. Yes, the aspect ratio, because they're showing it 16 by 9, even though these are 4 by 3 episodes, stuff is cut off on the top and bottom.
Yeah.
It's kind of annoying, but you know what? It's still great stuff.
It's still The Simpsons, is all I have to say. Simpsons. It's still been 14 days of The Simpsons, and I'm like,
I am so relieved I can erase those 70 episodes on my TiVo and just get the app.
Yeah.
That's great news.
You should wait until the app ships before you erase them.
Yeah, I still have several hundred donuts left over from Simpsons Tapped. You talked the last time you were on about, what was it, the Kardashians or something? You spent
the Kardashian game. Yeah. I did. I haven't played it since then, though.
Good. So that's you were shamed out of it.
I was shamed out of it. I have to say, I was shamed out of it.
All right, I can admit it now then. $300 in donuts in The Simpsons Tapped Out. Most expensive game I've ever played. Not to mention thousands of wasted hours for which I have no recompense and will never get back.
And didn't, like, the game get erased for you after you got...
Yeah, it got corrupted. Wow. But the worst thing is, a year later, EA fixed it, and I started playing it again. And they keep pulling me in.
It's
gone now.
So is the $300 total, or since you've restarted paying?
No, total. Okay. No, that's a lot of donuts. That's like 5,000 donuts. Lord. But maybe I can use them in the new Simpsons FFX game.
See, that to me, that they should totally like have a store built in and you could buy it with their own currency.
Yeah.
And then I would spend so much money. I recently bought the entire Topps series of Simpsons trading cards from 1990 off of eBay. They're only $5. I have them. Most of them in my parents' basement someplace. But yeah, it was actually way cheaper than I thought it would be.
You're such a geek. I can't believe you. You were Louise for Halloween.
Louise for Halloween. I sure was.
Can you love The Simpsons and Bob's Burgers?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The Simpsons is like my jam. People were noticing the background. You can't see it from here, but I've actually got a Ralph Wiggum. Yeah, here he is right here. I've got a Ralph Wiggum. That's an original production drawing from the show, from the This Little Wiggy episode. And I got that about 8 years ago. Yeah, it's really cool. Yeah, it's really awesome. When that episode came on during the marathon, I was like ecstatic.
Were you clutching this frame while you were watching that episode?
It came close to that. I was super excited, but yeah.
All us geek boys are just madly in love with Christina. She's our dream girl. So great to have you on, Christina. We keep trying to hire you. Get back to us. Every time you're on, I get all these tweets saying, why don't you ever give Christina her own show? She's so great.
I would love it. I would love it.
But you got to get permission from those guys at Mashable.
We got to talk to them, but they're...
It's no conflict. Lance and I were like this. Pete Cashmore and I, we're great friends. Whatever I can do to pull some strings for you, let me know.
Sounds good.
Is Cashmore involved at all anymore?
Well, I mean, he's the CEO, but he doesn't really have a lot.
Does he ever show up? Or is he like always in Scotland?
If you're trying to make the thing happen, don't diss the person that can say no to the thing.
Pete used to be on Twitter a lot, but he's very shy.
He's very shy. No, I mean, that's the thing. You wouldn't expect. You'd think, he's this big, gregarious. No, he's very shy, and he's a big thinker.
I love him.
He's such a great guy. I mean, like, he's the best.
How old is he when he started Mashable? He was just a kid.
I mean, 19.
It's like Anand. I mean, these guys, these young guys, and they're just movers and shakers. It's amazing.
Completely.
Well, you too, probably. You started when you were 14, I'm sure.
Doing some of this stuff, but I haven't been prolific and successful like they have. So, I mean, I look at them and I'm like, wow, you guys are just like...
Soon. It will all happen.
But I have to say, and I'll let you guys go, but I'm so geeking out right now because I was such a huge fan of both, you know, ZDTV and then Tech TV. And so to be on with the Screensavers is kind of like...
But you have been on with the Screensavers, haven't you?
Oh, my goodness.
You're Kate Patello.
I'm 17. If I could talk to 17-year-old me and be like, just wait, this is going to happen, I'd be like, no way.
Well, we can make it happen anytime you want, Christina. Just remember that.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Christina Warren. Mashable.com at film_girl on the Twitter. Patrick Norton, my old friend, my old pal. Techzilla, every week, revision 3. Yeah. Techzilla, TechZilla.com.
And don't forget Die Trying. From bacon to OpenVPN, we make things.
Or you die trying.
Yes. Fortunately, the bacon thing worked out. We were a little nervous about that one.
What is the website? Dietryin.com?
Dietryin.com. DIYTRYN.com.
Oh, no I.
No.
Or G.
No, yeah. No. DIY. It's like a pun.
Oh, I get it. DIYTRYN. Like that?
You ever try to find a URL in a .com these days?
It's not easy these days.
It was that or like Zebra Alex Bob George 77 dash.
That's why.
.com.
Die trying. Anyway, it's on revision 3. It's easy to find. DIY trying, die trying. You and Michael Hand, awesome. Build your own VPN. Yeah. Data visualization made easy. Well, you know,
if you haven't seen Plotly, check out Plotly.
Plotly. Awesome.
Plot.ly. Basically, instantly creates animated graph or interactive animated and social graphs from any data you want.
Oh, that's neat. It. Is that what you used for this?
That's what we use for that. Cool. Well, that was for our bathroomstatus.com. We built a bathroom monitor because we have like 54 Dangerous. People in two bathrooms in our office.
I love it. So. I don't want to watch an ad, so we'll save that for later. thank you, Patrick. Always a pleasure.
Great to have you.
And thanks for bringing... Who is that? That young man there.
The quiet young man with the headphones?
Seamus,
yeah.
He's like 8 feet tall.
Yes, he's growing like a weed.
I mean, we probably have video of him as a baby.
We have video. We have a picture of you holding him as a baby. That was 6 years ago. We're getting older.
Seamus, you're sweet.
Which is good. It means we're not dead.
Yeah, and how's Malachi doing? He's doing good, too. Do you have a child named Malachi, or am I imagining that? You don't. I made that up. Huh? Alex Lindsay has Malachi. Okay, never mind. I'll have to ask Alex how his son is.
Good.
Seamus and Malachi, they kind of go together. You know what I'm saying?
Well, Tristan,
that's it. Yeah. How's Tristan?
Tristan's good.
Yeah?
Tristan's, his language exploded. So all of a sudden, like, there's this two-year-old making complete sentences.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah.
All right. Well, my love to all of them at home and Sarah, too. We do Twit every Sunday afternoon. A little late today, but normally we try for 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time. And we are still in daylight savings time. So that's 2200 UTC. We will move, which means daylight savings time will move in about a month, I think.
It's a good plan.
Meanwhile, if you don't want to watch live, you can always get us at twit.tv. Or, you know, there's lots of ways to watch on your favorite podcast app. We also are on YouTube. Share it with your friends. Tell everybody about this episode because this was a lot of fun. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for having us.
And we'll see you next time. Another Twit. This is in the can. Amazing. We're not dead yet.